Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. The 154th British Open rolls along at Royal Birkdale. Alex Smalley leads at 5-under. Daniel Brown and Sung Jae-im are at 4-under. Scottie Scheffler, Bryson DeChambeau are in a gaggle of golfers, 2 off the lead at 3-under. About an hour from now, Shane Lowry and Brooks Koepka tee off. Rory McIlroy, Matt Fitzpatrick, and Xander Schauffele go around 10:15. In soccer, Argentina came from behind again, this time against England. Lionel Messi recorded a pair of assists to power the world champions past the English 2-1 and punch their ticket to the World Cup final. Argentina's going to battle Spain Sunday at 3 o'clock at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. England's going to play France Saturday at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami for the consolation game. In baseball, the regular season resumes today. Just one game on the slate Thursday. The Phillies will host the Mets at 7 o'clock. The Guardians are back hosting the Pirates tomorrow night, while the Reds are at the Rockies on Friday. You can hear Cincinnati Reds baseball tomorrow after the Buckeyes show right here on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Oh, Reese came in, and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then it's a rundown. And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
Well, let's do it live on a Thursday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. Isaiah in for Bake. Reese is here, which means we all win. Loaded up for you on a Thursday. The mailbag is piping full. We will get to that coming up at 10 o'clock. Doug LaMarie is going to join us at 10:30. Mr. Feinbaum moves to tomorrow at 10:30, and Doug goes from Friday to Thursday. Having to move some things around with 20 Most Interesting. Speaking of 20 Most Interesting, the Auburn Tigers are the topic of discussion today. We will get to them coming at 11 o'clock. Local guy now running War Eagle. I'm pretty sure this is the first time Auburn has ever been on our list. I'm pretty sure that they are. And Alex Golish, obviously a big part of why they are as the local guy trying to make it good on a meteoric rise all the way to Auburn. Via Ohio State and South Florida and everything in between. So we'll get to that coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. I was rooting for England. I don't know if it's like they've had to spend 2 months as we've celebrated 250 years since the Declaration of Independence. Their entire fan base and organization has to spend these 2 months in America while all of that was going on. I don't know if it's the fact that they invented the sport in the 1860s, published the first rule for it in 1863, and are the inventors of the modern game as we know it, and have not won it since 1966, and haven't even played for it since 1966. This is, when you do the drought of all droughts, this is it. This is the one that probably trumps all. Yes, there are some professional teams here or there that have gone a very long time. The Cubs had the longest streak ever before ending it in 1916. That one reached 108 years. And there are some long streaks that are still out there, some that we know very, very well here in the Buckeye State. But there is something about inventing the sport, winning it once in 1966, and never getting back. And the reality was this kind of felt like their team to do it. And they survived that crazy Sunday night at Azteca. They were great last weekend in knockout to get into the quarterfinal, into the semifinals. And then this Argentina team, you just had it in your head. Well, how long can they keep doing this? How long can they, because it doesn't feel like they're a great Argentina team. They have a supreme player who, even as he's in his late 30s now, is still the best player very clearly in the entire world. And and can do about anything with the ball that he wants to. And we saw that with the two assists yesterday in the afternoon as they beat England 2-1. But it did feel like this was perhaps England's time. And they scored first in this one. And then they basically did, for the football audiences out there, they basically played prevent. That's what they did. They played prevent defense. And they brought on a couple of defensive players. And they said, well, stand your attack. And Argentina sent ball after ball after ball on crossers into the box. And inevitably, two of those crosses came off the foot of Lionel Messi. And of course, when they come off of his feet, they're perfect. And they land exactly where they're supposed to be, on the head of Argentinian goal scorers. And all of a sudden, in the 85th and 92nd minute, you get the tying goal and eventually the winning goal. Once the first one happened, you knew the second one was going to happen. But I just felt sick for England. I felt sick for him, because you think about inventing a sport and you think about not even being able to play on the biggest stage for a championship. They have not done that in 60 years. It felt like it was lining up for them and it was taken away for them. And Argentina deserved all of it. But when you think of droughts and pain, the ones that come to mind are certainly this one. Certainly the Toronto Maple Leafs, 1967, the last time that they won a Stanley Cup, the most popular team in that country that invented that sport. The longest drought in the NFL is the Arizona St. Louis Cardinals, Chicago Cardinals. That one's 79 years. Goes all the way back 79 years. Here locally, of course, neither the Browns nor the Bengals have won a Super Bowl. The Browns last won a championship in 1964. And, of course, baseball's longest streak right now is, you guessed it, your beloved Guardians, 1948 on that. One that's probably similar to the England one, although I don't even think it does it quite justice, is the fact that Canada hasn't won a Stanley Cup since 1993, that none of the franchises in Canada have won a Stanley Cup. But plenty of Canadians have hoisted Lord Stanley, just none of the Canadian teams have actually done it. I think this would most similarly be like if Canada didn't win Olympic gold for 60 years and didn't even play for it. That's probably, or us in basketball, if in the Olympics we didn't win an Olympic gold medal for 60 years, having invented the sport, that would be pretty wild. I suppose baseball with us would be the same. I'm not sure. There isn't a whole lot of international baseball competition that is consistent. There's not a World Cup of baseball that's been around for 100 years that we pay close attention to. This one's up there. It's up there as one of the most painful. I thought that they were going to get through, but then once Argentina's assault started, it was pretty easy to see that they were going to be able to hold up. I was rooting for the English. Where were you guys on this?
Argentina. I can't root for England. Just the whole it's coming home thing I see all over social media, and I go, yeah, no, is in fact not coming home. You know, the second goal, or at least Argentina had a shot after they tie things. They had one go off one of the posts, and it was kind of after that I'm like, this is done. Like, this just, yeah, England's just kind of sitting on that. They were sitting back too much, and even from the layperson watching this thing, thinking, all right, it's just a matter of when Messi, yeah, decides to put the ball in as perfect as you can place it, Argentina's moving on to defend their world championship. And for England, I think the drought discussion for them, think of the talent they've had, think of the talent they have on this club, that close, oh, almost had it. You were up for most of the match,
yep,
but for 25 minutes. I would love to be doing a show on British sports talk radio this morning.
Oh,
it's all about sacking the skipper.
Oh, yeah, they want him gone. And they're not exactly having a whole lot of holding back on it. No, they put it on the manager.
I mean, he did have him just kind of dance around for half an hour.
He did. He basically conceded possession and said, we're just going to hang out and try to survive this and hang on to a 1-0 lead. It was prevent defense, Isaiah, is what it was.
And it's funny because I started the match, I wanted Argentina to win, but then when I got to the 80th minute, I'm like, I want England to hold on to this, because if they don't at this point, it's going to be, not only do you have the drought, and that's what's one thing when you have a drought going, but when you get close, like the Browns have never won a Super Bowl, but during my lifetime, we've never even been remotely close. So I haven't had that like true heartbreak. This is like they're on the doorstep, and then you get it ripped away when you led the entire match. And so that makes it even worse. It's like kicking you when you're down. And so once they got there and Argentina's threatening over and over again, I'm like switching to rooting for England, because I'm like, if they lose this game, what is going to happen? Only anarchy in the UK.
It's so probably like the Colts, the Steelers, and the Ravens in the mid-2000s when you just had the Patriots winning Super Bowls and advancing past AFC championship games where they're like, our teams are great. Why can't we get through this?
Why can't we? Yeah.
What's happening here? Well, Messi or Brady.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, and so you're going to get Argentina and Spain in the final. You guys put this in the prep. This is pretty stunning. So it's a 5 p.m. Eastern when this thing is going on Sunday night. And according to Tip Pick, it's the World Cup final between Spain and Argentina, the most expensive sporting event ever on record. The current price to get in is $7,400. Average purchase price, $11,300. Who in the hell can afford that? That is an unbelievable number. Of the ones I mentioned, the one that would provide the biggest release, I'm going to give you your choices. Cleveland Browns, 1964, if they won it. Maple Leafs, 67, if they won it. Guardians, 48, if they won it. Which of those provides the biggest release of pent-up anger, frustration?
Oh, it's Browns and then a chasm in terms of frustrating releases. Like, there's no more, and they do this a lot to themselves, tortured of a fan base, angry of a fan base, than the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, it feels like
pretty crazy. I think the Leafs would be pretty crazy.
I think Toronto, because they're so into it, not that Cleveland isn't. Cleveland is more of like despair. It's been disgusting since them for Cleveland. So I think that part of it, kind of similar to the kick you while you're down thing, they've been so far away. For the Maple Leafs, I feel like they deserve one. Cleveland probably deserves one because we've been through so much heartbreak. But the diehardness of Toronto is up there.
I would argue the Guardians have been through more heartbreak recently than the Browns.
Yeah, you want to talk about deserved.
You've been on the precipice.
I think it's the Guardians.
The Guardians do deserve it. They've been beautiful. They're great every year. Fantastic. And they get there, but they just can't see the deal.
Weather.
They had a game seven on their home field, for crying out loud. I mean, they went to a game seven with Jose Mesa. I mean, that give him the ball in the ninth. Let's go. There's some crazy droughts in college football, which this all got me thinking about. And a couple of these could be coming to conclusion. We will get to that coming up next. We're off and running on a Thursday. Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB, nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
It's a secret radio station. It's called The Fan 2. You can listen to the Bob and Tom Show, Jim Rome, and Buckeye stuff. Why do they pay me big money to whisper? The Fan 2 is on The Fan's HD2 channel and streaming on The Fan app. You're welcome. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We have hazy and humid conditions for today. That wildfire smoke in Canada still overhead today, giving us a milky sky. Highs reach the mid-90s with a feels like in the upper 90s. Very slight chance of a shower popping up today. For your Friday, hazy once again. We'll see highs around 90. There may be a few showers and storms developing later in the day as well. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact Meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The show that understands the importance of a situational beverage. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
And homes in Columbus under constant attack by pests like termites, ants, mice, God forbid. Don't wait for an invasion, guys. Protect your property and your family with Rose Pest Solutions Home Service Program. The Rose Home Service Program provides year-round protection for one flat annual fee, regularly scheduled visits. Rose is local, family-owned, trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for over 165 years. Get peace of mind today. Call 800-966-ROSE or visit rosepestsolutions.com. There are this England drought to 66. I was thinking about some of the college football droughts that are long standing. And a couple of these, so you're saying there's a chance. I mean, we watched Indiana win a national championship, so I think that opens the door for everybody. For example, Oregon has never won a national championship. They got a really good team this year. And if you look at the schedule and the talent, and they've been knocking on the door for about 15 years now, perhaps this is the year that they finally knock it down. Notre Dame has not won a national championship since 1988. This is perhaps their best shot at that since the early 90s. Is there another year in the last 25 years where Notre Dame has started this season in the top three or four in the country. I don't think they ever did when Brady was there. That was the most talented teams I can think of off the top of my head. The times that they've made the playoff or even the year that they played for it with Manti Te'o, they kind of came off the pack. It wasn't like they started the year in the top three or four in the country. They did several times in the 90s. In the early 90s, they started. There were some of the Ron Paulus teams, the Rick Meyer teams that started the year in the top four in the country and just never delivered. But that's been a long time and no title since 1988. They played for one, obviously, in 12 and were in the playoff again one other time. Were beaten pretty badly in both of those, but that's why Marcus is there to get him over that hump. And with C.J. Carr coming back, so you're saying there's a chance. Defensively, they should be good. Should be pretty good with our receivers. So Notre Dame's one to watch for. Did you know that Texas A&M has not won a national title since 1939?
I guessed it was a long time, but I didn't think it was that long. And that's something where, what, they had voted for?
So no one's seen that. No one alive.
It's like Minnesota's three championships. I think they got like 44, 46, and 47.
Yeah, there's some Big Ten ones. Like Iowa's got one in like 1958. Somehow they won a national title in like 1958. The longest two stretches in the Big Ten are actually Illinois, which was 1927. Sorry, Fish. That's Red Grange, I assume, in 1927. And then, of course, Rutgers won it in 1869, allegedly. But what the hell were they even playing at that point? Like, who knew what it was?
They beat Harvard or Yale. Were there like four teams that were playing college football then?
Probably. Yes. Is that the thing that they memorialize on their stadium? Is that
the birthplace of college football? It was birthed there.
This was the first. It was birthed from their loins there.
SHI Stadium.
Right. The show.
Which is always got to be tricky for whomever's calling games there.
Which college football team that hasn't won one would elicit the greatest reaction if they did? And the reason I ask this question is, and I've said this many times this offseason, I still cannot wrap my head around Indiana having a perfect season, a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, the number one pick in the draft and a national championship. I still can't get used to it. Anytime we do these things and when I'm doing 20 most interesting or guys, I find myself doing this when I'm looking at when we're going through these schedules for these teams. I just did it with Penn State when we were talking about Penn State or Michigan this year. And I forgot to notice, I look at the brand, I see the IU and I just gloss over it. When I look for like their biggest challenges. I forget the Hoosiers. They beat us.
Think about hearing that intro. So it'll be Big Noon in Bloomington, the defending national champions, host Ohio State. Like, wait a minute, what? Like, flip that one around. I didn't know. I had thought Penn State won one in the 90s. At 94.
They should have won in 94.
But Nebraska got more votes for that. So 86 for the Nittanies. I think that would probably be on par. The Oregon's the most obvious one in terms of first-time winners. Because the money that they've dumped into that program, how they have kind of been on the forefront of everything with college football over the last 25, 30 years. And they've got a handful of one or two appearances to show for it.
Played for it in against us in 14. They played for it against Auburn in
2010.
Sounds right.
No, was that right? Was that with Cam?
I think so.
Did Cam play them in 2010? I think you're right. Played for it then. Is that right? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So they played for it twice in 5 years. They've knocked on the door since for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really. I mean, now that we're thinking about this, if you go all the way back to the year 2000, is Oregon the second most consistent program of this century behind Ohio State?
Yeah. Because Alabama's got a couple drop-offs.
Well, Alabama had Shula's kid. Mike Shula was coaching Alabama for a little while, and they were a disaster. Like, when I was in the South, Alabama was nothing. Like, winningest program of the 2000s, it's got to be Ohio State, and Oregon might be second. Unless there's somebody like Boise or something like that.
Yeah, they've only really had three bad seasons since 2000.
What's their worst seasons?
Their worst seasons are during 2016, they went 4-8. 2020, if we're counting the COVID year, they went 4-3.
Okay.
And then the rest of them, 2004, they went 5-6. Every other one, they won at least 8 games.
So according to the Google AI machine, mm-hmm. Ohio State, Boise State, Texas, Oklahoma have been the most victorious. But that doesn't seem to track to me. Yeah, Oregon's right there. They are absolutely right there in this thing. And this is maybe their best operation. Total wins in the 2000s. This is updated. This is for Wikipedia. Boise State has the most. Boise State's 112-17 in the 2000s. Texas is actually second, 110-19. That doesn't make it. No, that's got. Oh, that's from 2000 to 2009. I'm like, this doesn't. That's not right. The entire century, it's different. Yeah, Oregon's knocking on the door on this thing. I think Notre Dame's the answer to the question I posed. I think Notre Dame winning a national championship would be the biggest. I still think that their fan base is massive. It's not Buckeye massive, but it's close. And I think if they won it a lot, I think it would be a lot like when the Knicks won it. Like people would be coming out of the woodwork as they've always loved the Irish or always, you know, every Catholic in North America would be on board if somehow they were able to win it. And they got, like I said, they played for it with Manti Te'o the year that Alabama got him. When they got to the national championship undefeated that year, they've been in the playoff a lot, obviously played for it, you know, against us. So they've been right there a lot. And now this is though the year where they've got some expectations to them. And how do you handle those expectations? And the same is true of Oregon. So you're going to have an opportunity here at the top to end some of these big droughts. And these programs have been knocking on the door for a little while now. So, yeah, the Notre Dame one's, I think, the answer, though. It's crazy you bring up Penn State, Reese, winning it in 86. That's when they beat Miami in the Fiesta Bowl that year. That was the year that Vinny Testaverde won the Heisman, and I think he threw 5 interceptions in that Fiesta Bowl, if memory serves. They got off the plane in fatigues. The University of Miami got off the plane in fatigues, and then Penn State beat them. And Toretta was terrible. I'm not Toretta. Testaverde was terrible in the Fiesta Bowl loss to Penn State, if memory serves that correct. That's the last time they won it in 86. Also stupefying that they didn't get a share in 94 because they were undefeated. I want to say they were preseason number one, and they didn't even get a split of it. They split it in 97 between Michigan and Nebraska, but for whatever reason, in 94, they didn't. And Penn State had a perfect season and got nothing to show for it at all. The Open Championship is underway over in England at Royal Birkdale. Get you an update on that. And is this the day for LeBron James? We'll get to all of that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends, right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up,
Jew? Sponsored by Apex Pros.
The pros who knows.
All right, that was way too difficult for me to find the winningest team since 2000. In that break, I was able to track it down. It's Ohio State by a wide margin, 285 wins since 2000. Alabama is second with 271, Georgia third, 270, then Boise State, 269, Oklahoma, 269, Clemson, 252, Oregon, 248, LSU, 247, Texas, 235, USC, 232. That is your top 10 on that list. I see Clemson on that list, and I just think, what happens to them over the next 5 to 10 years? What does that look like? All the rest of those programs, Boise's another one that, you know, what does that look like in the next 5 to 10 years? Did they kind of feels like they maybe had their golden era? All the rest of them, though, I think are going to be in fine shape going forward. They're not going to fall off any cliff. All of them seem to be pretty well organized. I think all the rest of them are on our 20 most interesting. Yeah, they all are. So, yeah, all of those programs are in pretty good spot. But Ohio State, well above and beyond Alabama, 285 to 271, most wins since 2000. The Open Championship is underway. Royal Birkdale, spectacular day, it looks like, over there. Short sleeves, sun-kissed, very little wind. Scoring is happening. The Smalley guy leading this thing at 5 under. Scottie Scheffler's still out there. He's at 3 under. Dave Shidlowski said something when we had him on yesterday that I thought was so cool. and regarding the Open Championship and the look of it. It's my favorite major because it looks like a completely different sport than everything else that we've seen. The Masters is so special, and it's the same place every year, and there's such pageantry to it. But I love that this looks like it's playing sport on the surface of the moon in many ways, and they have to play it differently. And Dave said something yesterday that got my attention when I was talking to him about some of the many differences between the Open Championship and the other ones. And one of the things he said that resonated with me, he said, they don't trick up the golf course. So you're not going to see them dry out greens. You're not going to see them grow up rough. The course is the course. And if somebody shoots 22 under par, God bless them. The only real defense that the course has is some of the impossible bounces that come off of it. So, because it's imperfect. I mean, we spend, good Lord, billions of dollars in this country making sure that every private club in this country, and quite honestly, a lot of the public ones, are perfectly manicured. We're all chasing the Augusta aesthetic. That's not what they're doing over there. There are uneven bounces. There are ripples. There are ravines. There are all sorts of things that can change it. And the course is the course. And so you have to play it, and you have to play it low to the ground. It makes you think. The other thing that he said that was that I feel very strongly about why I love this is, and on this course, there was some of the talk of these guys hitting 5 and 6 iron 300 yards by the time you're dealing with rolls. It makes you be inventive with how you play the course. You have to have a little bit of imagination. It's always been my favorite. I love waking up to it. I love seeing courses that I don't ever see anything of. Quite honestly, back when I used to play there a lot, I used to love going out to the Golf Club of Dublin after this because it had kind of this type of feel to it. And we would go out there and play there every Friday. But yeah, so I like it. It's cool. It's good to see a leaderboard there's a lot of guys under par right now. Rory and those guys are at 10 o'clock, right?
Like 10, yeah, 15. 10:15 for McIlroy, Fitzpatrick, and Xander Schauffele.
Yeah, yeah. For the casual, I think this one hits. You wake up, it's on, and it just looks different than anything you see the rest of the year.
That's the biggest thing, right? You can get up and say, oh, there's an actual sporting competition on during a time of the year where things are pretty light. I know baseball's regular season resumes tonight, but Guardians, Reds don't go till Friday. I think for this, we're talking about, you know, Rutgers and being the birthplace. This is, yeah. I think what they want to do at the Open is celebrate where golf was birthed, where the sport was birthed. Yeah. Now, this is just outside of Liverpool, and golf's credited to being birthed in Scotland, but the Open, like mm-hmm. that's for them, is the celebration of this and is them kind of peacocking. This is how we do it here. Mm-hmm. And it's as good as it is, maybe better anywhere else in the world. And it's interesting that you said about courses kind of in the northwest part of Columbus, you know, in Dublin, that want to emulate that. And it's like, well, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So he's smart, I thought. We always used to say this, like, a lot of people would shoot like their best rounds at the Golf Club of Dublin because the fairways are really wide, the greens are really big, and you can go. And if you're lucky enough to play with John Cooper, everything inside of 8 feet is a gimme. So God bless him. Coop learned a long time ago, man. The only commodity that matters is time. Like he's not waiting around for you to look over a putt. I'll promise you that. It's going to go in quick and we're going to go on to the next hole. And that's the way it's going to go. So yeah, it does. It lands. It's awesome. And hopefully you're going to get a star studded leaderboard. I love the idea of waking up to this thing and seeing it. And it just looks so foreign. As a kid, I remember just thinking, and I wasn't a golfer as a kid. I really didn't start playing until my early 30s. But when you would turn it on and just thinking, like, do they not have sprinklers? Why is everything so brown? And yes, they don't. There is no, these things have been around for 200 years. Like, they don't have sprinkler heads. They don't have that. You better pay attention to where you are on the course, Isaiah.
It's shocking when you first turn it on because I had it on the TV in front of me here, and I looked up for the first time this morning, and my brain isn't working yet, and I'm like, where are they golfing? And I'm like, oh, it's the U.S. Open. I'm like, that's why the course looks like, if this was somewhere in Columbus, we'd be like, man, they just aren't taking care of this one. They aren't keeping up with it. But then you look up there, and you're like, no, they're keeping up with it. It's just different over there.
Very, very different. Different setup. What did you make of Steve Kerr in his car being asked about LeBron James? And do we have the audio of this?
Isaiah did a good job cleaning the grainy cell phone footage up.
Hey, when you get LeBron, man?
Oh, we got him.
Okay, that's good. And
put that on Twitter.
Okay, I got you.
Well, he did.
Imagine just stopping like Steve Kerr in his car, be like, hey, we got to get LeBron. Like, yeah, we got him. It's fine. Good job by
Jake
him,
Fisher.
Though.
Yeah, very. Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report said on Wednesday, and I don't know who Jake Fisher is. I have no idea if he would know this, but said that LeBron will announce his decision after NBA Summer League is over on July 19th, which would be Sunday, same day as the World Cup final. His logic was that once those major events are completed, the sports news cycle opens for LeBron. I think it's already open. I do have one thing that I want to ask you guys both about this. Two-parter. Number one, as Cavaliers fans, what would him signing with Golden State do? If anything, would it change at all the way that you view him?
No, not for me.
Not for me either. I mean, I wouldn't like it because yet again, I've been pretty stand on if the Cavs need him, they have no other choices at this point. If they want to get to the finals, they need him. I don't know if they can get there with him, but he's their best shot. If he goes to the Warriors, I hated the Warriors back in the 2016, 2017s when they were going head-to-head with the Cavs. But some of that hatred for me is kind of worn away a little bit because you kind of figured out in 2020, Steph's really likable. He's a likable player. I hated him back when he was killing us, but I don't mind the Warriors as much now.
Well, I think it was the Olympic when they won the Olympics and he hit all those threes in the gold medal game against France. And you were like oh, it's pretty fun when he's on your team. You know,
it's so much fun. It's like the Kachucks. Like, yeah. You can't stand him, but then when you're rooting for him, you're like, I love this.
This guy's awesome. Yeah, great. He doesn't miss.
More of this, please.
So I think that Golden State would be tough for a lot of Cavs fans, especially people in Northeast Ohio. I also, and this is the other part of this, I don't know if anybody's following this the way people in specific Ohio, but even more specifically Northeast Ohio are following it. Like, I was just this morning, I was just going to look around and I was looking at, you know, some team sites and fan sites for various teams around the league, whether it be the Sixers or the Warriors or the Heat. And there's some chatter about this, but in Cleveland, you would think it was 2014. Like, that's how big of a deal it is to them up there. So I kind of wonder if, like, this whole LeBron free agency thing is something that the rest of the league is kind of like, ho-hum, go wherever, but to Cleveland, it's like almost a referendum on their franchise and their city and all of it. It feels like they are way more invested in this thing. And I suppose they should be. I mean, he was there first. He won a title there, all that stuff. They're the two-time jilted lover in this whole conversation. But it just feels like it is an over... that the Cleveland response to this is so over the top, and that everybody else, like in gold, you go look at Reed stuff and Warriors stuff, like if they get him, I think they'd be happy, but I don't know that they're not going to get up the next morning if they don't. Same thing in Miami, same thing in Philly. But it feels like if he doesn't now go to the Cavaliers, like the despair will be incredible up there.
Because they've been so out in front about LeBron watch, like that's the number one thing for the last week. I think you do build it up so much in your head to where if it's anything else, it's a raging disappointment. And rage being the key word for a lot of how sports is disseminated in Northeast Ohio. I think for the Warriors, they consider this is Steph's. It's going to be Steph's team. It's Steph's franchise.
Yeah.
Even for the Miami Heat, this is Giannis's team now. For Cleveland, it's always been about LeBron. For the Cleveland Cavaliers, I should say, it's always been about LeBron. Even with Donovan Mitchell, you know, you're still playing in the shadow
at
23. Like, you will never, at least as long as he's a player, be able to come out from under LeBron in that area of the country, in that part of the state. So I do understand from there the fans' perspective where it's, if it doesn't happen, it's the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
To Isaiah's point, that they're not a contender with him, without him, is the kind of the basketball reality of it. They don't have it enough right now on this roster, and they haven't done anything except lose Dean Wade to the Sixers.
Holding out hope that it would be LeBron. They're holding out hope it's him.
It's bad.
They're preparing that way, aren't they?
It seems like they have made no other moves. They cleared space with Dean Wade, and I think to your point, Bo. I mean, they're like the ex-girlfriend that just wants to be picked. That's what Cleveland is. He left one time. Well, he didn't pick us when he went to the Heat. He came back. He picked us, then we won. He left again. For Philly, it's like they don't even feel like they need him right now. If you're a 76ers fan...
No, I don't think they do.
They don't. And they got Jaylen Brown, and every 76ers fan was like, oh, we're making a run for the finals. The Warriors, like you said, it's Steph's team. The Heat just got Giannis. For Cleveland, it's like, if we don't get LeBron, what do we have? the same team that
James Harden.
Yeah, the same team that got swept by the Knicks just a couple months ago, and it doesn't feel good in Cleveland, and that's why they're holding out hope. But I just feel like they're the ex-girlfriend that just wants to be picked so badly, and maybe they will, maybe they won't. It's going to be heartbreak one way if he doesn't pick them.
I think he's going there, and I think he's always been going there. I think he's known that he's going there. I think that it sets up for, like, from a content standpoint, what he wants to do with his final swan song. It's the only place where he will be 41 dates a year, 41 dates next season. The adulation that he receives in that building would be unlike anywhere else. And in the end, LeBron is a little bit like, there was a guy, I forget the name of the guy who on Seinfeld with Jerry. Oh, Jerry loves me. Everybody talks about Jerry, that type of thing. Like, LeBron likes people to like him. I think the hardest thing for him the first time in Miami is being a villain. He didn't know how to behave as a villain. And then he kind of figured it out. But I think he wants the adulation. I think he wants the story. And from a basketball perspective, it's probably the most logical fit. Although I still think it would be pretty wild to have three people who are pretty ball dominant, like all out there at once. So I don't know what it would look like in crunch time or how they would make that work, but I think you'd have that problem everywhere. And so to me, I've always felt like it was going to be Cleveland, and whether it's today, it could be today, who knows, when all of this shakes out. He's got a podcast appearance today at Fanatics Fest. Is that the deal?
He's got a pair of podcasts over the next 2 days. Yeah, I think he does Mind the Game today with Tyrese Halliburton. Both of those are in the afternoon, so they're when we're off the air.
Okay.
Thanks, LeBron, for that. But, yeah, I don't think it comes at Fanatics Fest. Certainly Michael Rubin would like that, but I'm not sure that's the case.
The last time he came back to Cleveland was AR and I were doing the show, and we were on the air when the Sports Illustrated still shot popped on Twitter. And Lee Jenkins wrote it. Think about how far we've come since 2014. That's the way that the definitive way of delivering your message was in Sports Illustrated. And now who the hell knows how this thing will inevitably be delivered. Speaking of how far we've came, we handed out some awards last night. Did anybody watch it? We'll get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
With Skip Mossick.
Saturday, we're at the Virtues Golf Club to preview next week's Ohio Am. Plus, we'll visit with Matt Lefferts of the Ohio Golf Association.
Tita Green with Skip Mossick. Saturday mornings at 9 on The Fan.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
After putting up with Dom DeBerry for a decade, the broadcast gods gave Bo these two. This is Bishop and Friends.
The ESPYs were last night. 34th annual ESPYs. I'm so old, I remember the first one. Did you guys watch this at all? Was there ever a point in your life where you watched the ESPYs?
Maybe. I can't remember, to be honest. The last at least decade has been, I'll see what's on Twitter. I'll see what's happening on social media the next morning.
I didn't even know that they were on last night. I didn't know either. Until I saw it on the show sheet this morning.
I didn't either.
Do you still watch ESPN, the channel?
What do you mean? Like, other than for live games?
Yeah, do you flip on in the morning for SportsCenter, or is it on during the day?
The boys put it on when they were in school, and they do it in the summer, too. They will put it on, you know, as they're having breakfast. They'll watch, like, SportsCenter into, inevitably, like, the 8 a.m., like, I'll hear Mike Greenberg, it's time to get up, and then away, you know, we're going to make a big deal out of something. So, like, that happens. I will, if I am home and not cooking dinner or something, and if it's a big sports story, especially an NFL or NBA story has happened during the day, I will watch the first segment of PTI if it works out that I'm home and it's around. I still watch College Game Day, obviously. That's on a Saturday. That I'm locked into that. It's a really good question, Reese. Do I watch ESPN other than live games? I guess the answer to that is no, other than a little bit of PTI and, you know, it's on in the background when the kids wake up. I guess that's kind of it. It's an interesting spot because for the longest part, you know, of boy, my formidable years, like it was SportsCenter was it.
You had to be it was appointment television. It was.
Yeah, it was. And we grew up, so the 11 p.m. Sports Center here was 9 p.m., and then the Feel Good Edition was the midnight or 2 a.m., and that was the one that we would watch because that had all the West Coast stuff on it, was that one. That's an interesting one. I mean, Isaiah, you're significantly younger than me, obviously. What is your relationship with ESPN?
See, for me, when I was growing up, it was, you got home from school, immediately turned the TV on. I'm either watching NFL Network or SportsCenter, ESPN2, whatever one has the best show on at the time. A lot of times for me, it was Around the Horn. But when I go home now, I don't even really turn on the TV that often. If I do, if I'm looking for something in the background, honestly, at this point, I lean more to Fox Sports 1 over ESPN. I listen to the shows over
really?
Time. Yep, I will go to Fox Sports 1. If I want something in the background, if I'm eating lunch, I'll put that on. But yeah, similar to you, Reese, I don't really turn on ESPN just to watch at this point. I would rather be scrolling on my phone, mm-hmm. looking at Twitter while eating lunch than I am turning on SportsCenter, because I think I'll find more relevant news there.
Reese, what's your relationship to it now?
So now it's just, if there's games on, I'll seek it out. Like even my subscription to ESPN changes based off of the time of the year.
Oh, that's
like right now I've just got whatever's connected to Disney Plus and Hulu as the most mm-hmm. basic package. In the fall, that'll change because I'll want college football. But now I can't remember the last time I actively watched it. It's on in the studio, but I'm not looking up at it. And so I ask that to go, they're probably advertising the ESPYs during their programming, probably.
Yeah, because probably.
How would any of us know? But they're not. It's nowhere else. It's not being discussed. And even on social media, where I would used to just lean on that, it wasn't anywhere last night.
It's a really good point. Now, here's another one for you. When you guys, if you want to go to like a website to like see the day in sports, what website do you go to for that? Because I know Bake's a big Bleacher Report guy. He gets the Bleacher Report stuff. He sends the Bleacher Report stuff all the time. I don't do Bleacher Report at all. What do you guys, if you're looking for like, hey, what happened? Like, let's say you're prepping the show and I'm not here. What's the first site you go to go, oh, all of this has happened?
If it's not Twitter, it's CBS Sports.
CBS Sports for mm-hmm. you.
That so was the
pop-ups bug me on CBS Sports. That's the only reason I don't go there. What do you got, Isaiah?
I'll still do ESPN or CBS Sports are my two go-tos, but I check Twitter/X before either of them because that's where the most recent new news will be on Twitter before it's on ESPN.
And I use ESPN now for just nuanced things like game times, TV, mm-hmm. over-under, yeah. ticket prices.
Yeah.
Everything else I get elsewhere.
Lists. They're on CBS Sports and on ESPN. Rankings.
Yeah, they'll do a lot of lists, a lot of rankings. I still think that their website is the easiest for me to navigate if I'm looking for like college football players' stats or rankings. I know where it is. There's no pop-ups. I can get there pretty quickly. I still think they have the best, in my opinion, they still have the best just pure sports website that's out there. There's a bunch of ones that have opinion to them, whether it's Barstool or Outkick, or there's a million of those out there that have a slant or an opinion to them that I check out too. But it's still my number one go-to for like, what is happening? What happened in the sports world? I still go there. As for the ESPYs, I think probably it's still cool for the people who get to go. It's kind of like a big party for all of them. I think the apex of it was when Norm MacDonald hosted it. And if you're too young to remember that, that was the most amazing monologue maybe ever of someone hosting an event. So go find that on the YouTube. It's on there. It's absolutely sensational. I couldn't even, so was it, it was the Marcello guy who did it, right? Marcello Hernandez did it, the guy from SNL?
Yes.
Okay. I haven't seen any clips of him being funny, so I don't know if he was or not. Nothing made the social yesterday at all. I didn't see anything from that, but he is a pretty funny guy. He's dang good on Saturday Night Live for sure. All right, second hour of the program coming up next. Doug LaMaurice coming up at 10:30. We kick it off with the mailbag. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB, nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. A double bogey on 18s derailed the start of the British Open for 29-year-old American Alex Smalley. His 5-under became a 3-under entering the clubhouse. Daniel Brown, Sung J.M., and Ryan Gerard share the lead at 4-under. Defending Open champ Scottie Scheffler is 3-under through 16, so is Bryson DeChambeau. In about 15 minutes, Rory McIlroy and Matt Fitzpatrick with Xander Schauffele will begin their first round at Royal Birkdale. In the World Cup, Argentina is going to defend their championship on Sunday. Lionel Messi recorded a pair of assists to power Argentina to a 2-1 comeback win on England in yesterday's semifinal. Messi and company have Spain at MetLife Stadium Sunday at 3. And in baseball, the regular season resumes Friday for the Guardians and the Reds. Cincinnati's at Colorado. The Cleveland Guardians host the Pittsburgh Pirates. This update is sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Take a vacation from high interest rates with special rates on balance transfers at BMI FCU. BMIFCU.org/consolidate.
If you love a good pie analogy,
think of the cap as a pie. And once you take out one piece, there's less left for the next guy.
Then this is the radio show for you. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Doug LaMaurice coming up in 28 minutes. Mr. Feinbaum moves to tomorrow at 10:30. Before we open up that mailbag, this one from Matt in regard to our conversation about ESPN and how much we used to watch it. I remember in the summer I'd watch SportsCenter four times in a row into body shaping, into up close with Roy Firestone or something when I was a kid. ESPN was all I ever watched. Fun fact, one of the body shaping hosts is Chris Fowler's wife. Good job out of Chris Fowler on that. We had far fewer options. Just way fewer options to do. And we didn't have phones. We didn't have things hitting us with little dopamine hits every 6 seconds the way phones do. It's just a totally different way to grow up then than it is now. Time to open up that mailbag. Hit it, fellas.
Our comment box is always open. Any feedback is mostly appreciated.
The mail never stops. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. There's never a let up. It's relentless. Every day it piles up more and more and more. You've got to get it up. And the more you get out, the more it keeps coming in. Again.
Bishop and Friends present Emails.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Buy four windows, get four free sale. Visit windownation.com now.
This one from Logan made me laugh as soon as I saw the title because I knew exactly what he was referring to. So he sends an email. The title of the email is Cam Coleman. Do you guys know what this is in reference to before you read the email?
No, the Auburn wide receiver?
Yeah, now Texas wide receiver.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is this from the other day when we had the comparison between we get to find out who the best wide receiver is in all of college football, Jeremiah Smith or Cam Coleman?
Nailed it. Our guest, Anwar Richardson, who we have on a lot when we talk about Texas, good dude, and he said this. So this is from Logan, Cam Coleman. I knew exactly what he was talking about. So did you, Isaiah. Did this dude from Texas just compare Cam Coleman to Jeremiah Smith, and you didn't kick him off the air? I thought the same. And I think if you were watching on YouTube, you probably saw my eyes go, something like that. Look, they're guests. They're guests of the show. Unless they do something appalling, we're not going to. I'm trying to think if I've ever thrown a guest off the air. I ended an interview AR and I were doing with Danny White early once because he was just a total jerk. I do remember that. The former Cowboys quarterback, he was a total jerk. And I remember ending that in like 4 minutes. But beyond that, I can't think of any other. But they're guests. You know, we're not going to run them when they're guests. Like in the old days when you had college, you could run collars. But yeah, we're not running guests. But I thought the same thing.
So did I. Immediately, I was like, we'll see how that goes over. If he would have done Julian and Arch, that would have been better.
Well, you can't run him. You're not going to rack him for that.
Yeah.
No, you're not. Number two, Dusty May. This one from Mike. Dusty May and Ward is the topic. Hey guys, about 2 weeks ago, Bake said he would wait and see the real reason Dusty May bolted. Something may fall. We now have the answer as old Ward is on the hot seat. Might be a total revamp at that team up north. Just love Bake's intuition. I don't think that these two things are connected. I don't. I think Dusty May won a national championship at Michigan. I think Dusty May answers, when you win a national championship at Michigan, my guess is he doesn't really answer to anybody except the board of trustees, the president. I don't think it was about money. I don't think it was about anything. I think it was about, I get a coach Cooper Flagg in the prime, in his early stages of his NBA career. I get to go to the NBA where I don't have to worry about NAL and free transfer and everything else. To me, the timing of this works out well in Bake's point, and also in Mike for bringing it up, but I just don't ever think it had anything to do with what was going on at Michigan with Dusty May. I think it's just Dallas, Cooper Flagg, NBA, no NAL, no free transfer. I've already accomplished everything you can accomplish in college. What more is there to do is the way I read it. I think this is coincidence more than anything else. I could be wrong, but that's my view of it.
I do wonder if there's a little bit, and just an aside, like Baker's got great intuition about these things, so the email points astute. I think that with Dusty, they hung a banner that you can't take down for that national championship that Dusty May won. Yeah. Like, if he knew that something was coming with Ward, or he sees what's going on behind the scenes, and maybe that's I don't really want to deal with that, but you win, and so that really heals and cures everything. But to your point, there's just too much there with the NBA.
And
the timing was everything for, in my opinion. Yeah.
I would lump it all together with the having to deal with NIL and the free transfers. And then if your athletic department's a mess, that's just one more thing that you have. It's not that he was trying to escape from under the downfall that was coming. I think it was more of that could be another factor that maybe this setup they have here isn't perfect. It might be better for me, because I don't want to deal with all this crap, to just go and be a part of the NBA, which more than likely has been a dream of his for the past 30 years, trying to get to the pinnacle.
I guess what I would say is kind of my closing argument, if I had Dusty May on the stand, like, would you have taken the job in Sacramento? And I guess my hunch is probably he wouldn't. I think that it was the Dallas opportunity was so significant. This one from Bob. The subject is preseason football. Why do we fans get hyped up about preseason football? Is it simply because we have been devoid of real competitive football for months? I mean, most teams have to have a good conception of what their roster will be by August. Maybe one or two guys will flash, but even then, they will probably end up on the practice squad. Meanwhile, the owners continue to charge premium pricing for these meaningless games. I think you nailed it. I think we're starved for football. We're excited to just see uniforms and helmets and pigskin and hitting and all of it, and so we watch it. If you're lucky enough to have a franchise with a young quarterback, then that's always exciting if they actually play them. Having been through like 9 NFL training camps now consecutively, I can tell you that the one thing that is actually the coolest that happens in training camp now regularly that you don't get to see much of is the joint practices. That's really cool, because that's good on good when you see those. Like when you see... I remember when Philly came into Cleveland the year that Deshaun's first year, and Philly came in, and Nathan and I and Joe Thomas were sitting there, and they got off the bus, and they had Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter and all of that defense and AJ, all the studs, AJ Brown, all of them, and you just went, oh, we're not on that level. You could just tell. And then they went good on good, and you went, yeah, we can't block them, and there's going to be some problems there, and the Browns obviously had it, and they ended up winning the Super Bowl that year. So I think those are really cool. I think preseason football, though, Bob, you nailed it. We just haven't had it for so long, and so you're starved for it. I don't think you need it at all, quite honestly. I think you could skip it. I think you could go to 20 regular season games, and I think eventually they will. I don't think that there's really any value in preseason football games, despite what you're told.
I also think it's why, despite a lawsuit being filed currently against them or a court battle currently going on, the NFL is going to be cool with John Gruden doing a game. It's going to draw more eyeballs and ears where normally they probably wouldn't, because they wouldn't want the headache, but this they see because it's a preseason game. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
And it feels like, too, depending on what your team, the status of your own team, could be the level of excitement you have. If you have a roster that has a lot of question marks, ooh, this seems really exciting, even though a lot of them won't get answered in these four games. But if you have a more settled roster, probably not quite as exciting for you.
I believe this is Captain Petey, who writes, Philadelphia, although proud to have grown up in Aurora, which is in Northeast Ohio, I'm firmly Philadelphian, having moved here in 2011. And he ranks them. Remember, we were curious, the Philly kind of breakdown. And so we have this right. Eagles, Phillies, and then Sixers, Flyers, depending on how the season is going. Philly sometimes gets a bad rap, but if you've ever been here on game day, everyone in town is wearing gear, whether or not they're going to the game or not. The stadiums are super accessible, and the tailgating is only matched by the Mooney lot. Go Browns. I have not met a single Philadelphia native who I don't enjoy their company, who I don't think is a hell of a person. And I think that it is, it's right there as one of the great sports cities in America. It probably doesn't get the attention that New York and Boston get. I don't know why that necessarily is, but probably not. But they probably deserve it. Because every time they do something in Philly, it hits.
Yeah, after this week, I was willing to just say, give baseball's All-Star game to Philadelphia for the next 5 years.
Just every year.
Just let them come in and boo everybody that's not wearing a Phillies uniform.
It's pretty cool.
And do they have the worst rep, would we say, Philadelphia, over the past couple of years?
Well,
I know the Eagles have been great.
They threw batteries and snowballs at Santa.
Yeah.
That's not great.
They've been on a rough run, especially with the Eagles going to the Super Bowls multiple times. They were kind of in the spotlight, and it felt like they were on a crazy run of doing probably stupid things. But there's one bad egg.
Yeah. I think the give a damn there is pretty close to unmatched. This one from Ben, Stallone movies, 80s, 90s flicks he saw too young. Hey, guys, always appreciate the banner, the best banner in the biz, and taking my emails. Love last week with the Stallone movie talk reminiscing and brought me back to my childhood. I'm a man, I'm 40. Now as a dad of three, 13, 12, and 8, I've subjected them to movies mom definitely would not approve of, a.k.a. Deadpool the other night. Boy, she was not happy. But in hindsight, my best times as a kid were watching all these ridiculous and violent Van Damme, Seagal, Willis, Arnold, Stallone movies, and still looking back and amazing memories with my dad, even though my mom would be furious. Glad the torch has been passed to me. Question to all of you. What movie do you recall being probably way too young for you to watch but got subjected to? Best memory for me was Under Siege. Yeah, that's... I didn't watch it with my dad, but yes, I saw that pretty young. With four of my buddies that 30-plus years later, still great friends with, and we still talk about this moment like it was yesterday with my dad. You know what part I'm... Yes, I know what part you're talking about. Love you guys. Keep up the fantastic show, and go Bucks. The movie that I saw way too young with my parents. Do you have one off the top of your head, like a movie you saw with your parents way too young? I don't know if I saw... My dad was not into the action movies. I'm trying to think of something that we watched. We used to do, like, family movie night. I remember that well. And we watched a lot of thrillers and stuff. I remember watching The Firm really young. And there was a scene in that was a little dicey. And my mom, like, said, close your eyes, close your eyes. There was stuff that I watched with my buddies way too young. I mean, I remember, like, watching Basic Instinct and... Yeah. Middle school, that was an attention getter, obviously.
I remember my mom took my brother and I to see The Matrix Reloaded. So this was in 2003. And walking out of the theater, I remember her going, that was probably a bit too much for you two. You know, we were 13 and 14 at the time, so, you know, we'd already seen the original Matrix.
Yeah.
So it wasn't anything on that level, but I do remember her having that, like, that aha moment, like, eh, it might have been much.
I remember going to... The only one I can think of was probably Step Brothers. This is where the age gap's going to show. Step Brothers in 2008, I would have been 10 years old. And my dad would oftentimes put on movies my mother would not approve of, but that was okay with him. And then she would walk in and be like, well, Todd, why are we watching this? And she
you
was a big...
Step Brothers at 10?
I was 10, yeah. Step Brothers at 10.
Wow.
At the house. That's when it released. And I pretty much saw it almost immediately. We watched a lot of movies at home rather than going to theaters. My mom was a big... Cover your eyes, even for like the most minuscule of anything that's going on. A big cover your eyes guy. And that led on to even when me and my brothers, probably at this age now, if we were watching a movie.
I think I told you guys this. Last week I watched American Pie with NBC. I did not remember that going that way. I hadn't seen it in 20 plus years. I had no idea the entire movie was about that.
That might have been a little too much.
Yeah, it was way too much. I was like, this is awkward. I had to fast forward. I'm like, oh my god, this Nadia scene doesn't end. Like, there was a lot going on in that I had recalled that I failed to recall. We'll continue with the mailbag coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah. They've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
When Man and Timmy are inviting select jabronis to the station for pizza, hey, that could be you. Email goodcleanboy@gmail.com and tell us why you should be chosen.
Presented by Billiards Plus and sponsored by Paisano Peppers.
The Fan.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We have hazy and humid conditions for today. That wildfire smoke in Canada still overhead today, giving us a milky sky. Highs reach the mid-90s with a feels like in the upper 90s. Very slight chance of a shower popping up today. For your Friday, hazy once again. We'll see highs around 90. There may be a few showers and storms developing later in the day as well. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Bo could quit today and become the school drop offline coordinator. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are. We are proudly brought to you and sponsored by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for nearly 80 years. Wedding weekend's coming up next weekend. Sawmill Easton. Check them out. They'll take care of you. Back to the mailbag we go, and we kick this one off with a good one from Snags. All right. There's a lot of mind blown in this one. He actually wrote this one to you specifically. Fun little segment to finish. Hey, guys. In honor of you promoting Wild Hogs basketball team, Tom Hanks turned 70, Sly turning 80, Daryl Hannah discussion, and then me coming home from the gym, turning my TV on and seeing one of two movies I want playing at my funerals showing, Grumpier Old Men. Hey, guys, let's recast the actors and actresses from Grumpy Old Men. Are you familiar with this IP?
Familiar with. I don't think I've seen it.
They're great. They're great. Isaiah, I'm guessing, has no point of reference on Grumpy Old Men at all.
I don't even recognize any of these actors. I'm going down the list here.
This is pretty amazing. So if you're familiar with this and you're driving around, this blew my mind when Snags wrote this in the email. Jack Lemmon was 60 years old when this movie was filmed. Mathau was 65. They look 85 and 80. That's me, parenthetically. The actors who are on this list in their 70s look way younger than those two do. So this also means we're all kind of aging better, which is kind of a mind-blowing thing. You can fill a lot of time in a dull basement season. He goes, pick your actors and actresses to fill the roles. So your guys' a little bit of lack of familiarity of this is going to make this a little bit difficult. But the idea that Jack Lemmon was 60 when they filmed this is stupefying to me. The idea that Mathau was 65 is stupefying. Anne Margaret at 54, Sophia Loren at 61 when she filmed this. I tell you what I do. Then he lists a bunch of actors who are in like their early 60s who would be kind of in the mix for this. I think the no-brainer way to do this as the two leads would be Pitt and Clooney. Like, they have a rapport the way that Lemon and Mathau did. They're both, I mean, Brad Pitt just played a F1 driver, for God's sakes. But, I mean, I know he's in his 60s, and I'm pretty sure Clooney's older than him. Clooney's got to be close to 70, I would think.
He's 65, George Clooney is.
How old's Pitt? Is he, like, 61?
Fine here.
62?
62,
like
yeah.
Yeah, so I would go those two. So he went... Snags went John Stamos and Jim Carrey as the two kind of leads. I'll go Pitt and I'll go Clooney. I think as the Sophia Loren role, Sophia Loren 61, that's Jennifer Lopez. Isn't that Jennifer Lopez?
J-Lo. Interesting. Yeah.
He went Polina Poroskova. I'll go J-Lo because I think J-Lo's like 56.
She's 56 on the button.
Okay, so there's a good one. He went Marissa Tomei as Ariel. Who would be a good female?
Sandra Bullock. Yeah, she's 62.
Sandra Bullock. Yeah, go Sandra Bullock in that role. And then for the old guy who was played by Burgess Meredith in the movie, who was an actual 88 and actually looked it, he went Jack Nicholson or Bill Murray. I think you nailed it with Murray. I don't know how much older Murray is than Pitt and Clooney. That's the way I would do that, though. God, we are aging better, aren't we? Like those guys. Did you Google like what they looked like in that?
Mm-hmm.
Mathau and Lemmon?
They were old.
They were 60 and 65.
Yeah.
They looked 80 and 85.
Martin Short and Steve Martin. They do the Only Murders in the Building. I think that's on like its fifth season. But when I was looking at Grumpy Old Men, I was like, well, they kind of do that. They have that kind of chemistry in that show.
Mm-hmm.
And they're older, but they've aged great too. Especially Martin Short.
Woody Harrelson plays Grumpy really well.
He
would be mine.
Yeah, he would be. Those movies are good, by the way. This one from Jeremiah, the subject, Alcoholic March Madness Bracket. I hope you're doing well. Love the show, all of your stories. I was hoping this would be a good time of year to remind you of this idea since there isn't much going on. Last March, I gave a Hey Guys question about possibly creating an alcohol-themed March Madness bracket. The regions were beer, bourbon, whiskey, cocktails, or whatever you want them to be. You could have the fans vote like the Afternoon Boys do with the food brackets and done for several years, or us and Reese and Bake and all of us could decide our favorite in each matchup. Maybe Highbank could sponsor it if they wanted to. You'd have a tasting at the location that does the tours for the Final Four and the championship matchups. I won the Highbank's tour from you when I submitted the question. It was a lot of fun, and my family and friends really enjoyed it. Keep up the good work. Thank you for doing what you do. Really makes my workday so much better listening to all the shows on The Fan every day. Thanks, Jeremiah. I appreciate that. I remember this. I've bookmarked this. I could see us doing this in March as a bracket challenge that time of year. It could also be June a little bit if you wanted to do it in June. I think either one of those two windows kind of work pretty well for it. I haven't forgot you, Jeremiah. I'm good. You're good. Last one from Ben. The subject, bachelor party story. I'm going to do this live on the air, and we're going to edit it in real time if it gets a little bit dicey.
Ooh.
Have not read this.
Have the dump button ready.
Yeah, we'll be ready. Regarding the talks of a recent joint bachelor-bachelorette party, which this is what you did, Isaiah.
Yep.
Pardon my take, seems bonkers. Got me thinking on the last 10 years of these trips with buddies of maybe in hindsight would have been a bit safer for me and my knucklehead friends. Around 5 years ago, my good pal's wedding, where I was the best man in Cancun, we got in early to the wedding for the bachelor party festivities. After a late night with no sleep, right into golf, right to the beach for more shenanigans, kept the bevs and the party time going, tossing around a vortex football, still the greatest beach invention of all time, for fun time, turned into a bit of the hangover movie. The groom-to-be went deep and never saw a wooden canoe on the bench and proceeded to dive for a ball into its rickety old thing, made the catch, which was awesome, but then chaos ensued. His leg went through the canoe, screams, blood galore. Also, help immediately came and had to bring him to the hospital. Mind you, we were in Mexico, so that we knew that this could be bad. Luckily, we had a decent hospital nearby and doctors who could communicate with us. But then things went from bad to worse. Found out our friend shattered his shin bone, tore his ACL, broke his leg after long hours of examining and surgery, said he could lose his leg. My God. Thank God they were able to save it. They did surgery, casted him up, and we could all breathe a sigh of relief for the time being until I was nominated by the six other guys to make the call to the wife who was flying in that day. Needless to say, it didn't go well. Long story long, 3 days later, the couple was married. The wife wanted to kill us all, but it worked out, and even able to take some fun wedding pics together to make light of the intense situation. He actually sent some images to us. It's pretty remarkable. But the question to all of you, any events in your party days that went sideways such as this on bachelor trips or other festivities with buddies, you're all the best. Thanks, as always. And he sent the photos. This is why I would never do a bachelor party the weekend of the wedding. I never even know anybody doing that until I saw it in The Hangover. I never heard of anybody doing it the same weekend, like pre-gaming it ever. We tried to do something like we got married in Southern California, and I remember like everybody really trying to get me really lubed up. And I remember telling my buddy Travi Bell, who's a sage of a man, I said, every time somebody gets me a drink, I want you to order me a ginger ale on the rocks. So if they say, get this, get me a ginger ale on the rocks, they'll think I'm drinking whiskey and it's fine. And that's what I did because I knew I did not want to be hungover the next day for the wedding. There's a bunch of stuff that happened in my parting days, none of which I want to tell on air because apparently my kids listen from time to time.
Same, minus the kids.
Yeah.
There's nothing from a bachelor party, though, that there's nothing from a bachelor party standpoint that makes you believe having that the same weekend or even within the a 30-day vicinity is a good idea. If you're going to do a bachelor party or a bachelorette party, months? 2 months at least?
At least. You need a good buffer in between.
Yes.
Because as soon as when I read that, when his leg going through the canoe, I'm like, okay, if it's a canoe that's got some strength, the ones that you can rent have some strength, you're losing the leg.
God.
That was the first thing I thought was, is this the day before the wedding? Which, is that like an older, is that a thing people always used to do?
I don't know. Maybe.
I've never been to one.
Maybe they did. I think, now that I'm thinking about it, I think my dad said he did that when he married my mom. Like, they did the bachelor party, like, the day before.
Like, getting hammered right before, yeah. The day before, everyone's going to be hungover. Like, I don't know why
what
that would
mess.
Be. I mean, at least the weekend before, at least you have a little bit of a buffer there.
Yeah. You got to learn from those things, kids. Doug LaMaurice in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
They'll offer betting advice, but don't bet on it being good. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time to head out on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Conversation with a great friend of the program, the great Doug LaMaurice, the Bill and Doug Show on YouTube. You can find him there. Let me ask you this. Last week, Big 12 Media Days. This week, ACC Media Days. 5 years from now, what did those two conferences look like?
Maybe one. I don't know. Like, I've always thought, and I thought the Big 12 has done a better job of this.
Me too.
I think there's room for like an outlaw conference, right? That there's like, there's the Big Two, but it doesn't have to be only two. But then don't try to be the Big Ten and the SEC. Be a little nuts. Be a little wild. Be a little different. So like, whatever, right? If they're having Nelly do a halftime show or they're giving out a championship belt for something, or like, Brett Yormark in the Big 12, like they try to be different. They want to be an alternative. So like, I like that version of it. And if it's wide open, you know somebody from there is going to be in the playoff. Some of those teams are good. Top to bottom, is the league as good? No. Do we want them in? Yeah. Do we want them to exist? Yeah. Could the best team in the Big 12 play with the best team in the Big 10 and the SEC? Yeah, I think they could. So I think there's room for that lane. And, but just, don't try to be a third version of the Big Ten and the SEC. And so I don't know if the ACC, I don't know if you can make Wake Forest and Boston College into an outlaw conference, but I feel like with Texas Tech and Colorado and BYU, and like, they're just, they can have a little bit of a vibe. So I hope it's, I think there's room for it to stay that way. Don't you?
I do. I think the Big 12's a cockroach. I think they survive.
Yeah.
No matter what. I think they're creative. I think they're malleable. I think they've got an identity, Doug, with their basketball, where they're elite there.
Yep.
They got schools that really care about their basketball. That matters. Not as much as football, but it still matters. And I think in a weird way, like, all of their schools kind of feel similar to me, despite their, they shouldn't. Like, UCF feels very similar to like Cincinnati to me, even though they have almost nothing in common and feel similar to Houston. Like, to me, at least they have an identity. I look at the ACC. I have no idea what this thing is. I have no clue. It's Tobacco Road, and then I don't know.
And I think the Big 12 has done a good job in losing Texas and Oklahoma. They've turned the parity into a plus. That you don't know who's going to win the Big 12 because there's not a big dog. Now, I guess maybe Texas Tech has taken that, but it's still not the same. Whereas in the ACC, you have existing powers in Miami, Florida State, and Clemson that have a history, and it makes it top heavy. And then it's like, well, then what are, if from a football standpoint, what are Duke and Boston College and North Carolina State? Whereas like you lost Texas from the Big 12 and you thought you're dead. And I actually think they've spun it in a way to survive, whereas I feel like, oh yeah, Miami's going to be good, but do you care about anything else happening in the ACC? Whereas like in the Big 12, it's like, you know what? I kind of feel like I should watch Baylor Cincinnati because there's a chance it might matter, but there's no way that Wake Forest and North Carolina State's going to matter, so I'm not going to watch it. No offense to CJ Bailey.
No, and I think the thing that's so ironic about the conversation we're having, because I think the Big 12 is far more likely to survive as is or in some variation of what it is, and the ACC, I'm not sure what's going to happen to it. And so the irony of this is the ACC actually has schools that both the Big 10 and the SEC want.
Right.
I mean, and that's
exactly.
That's the thing that's weird, is they actually have the brands that we want. I think that that could change by the time we can actually take them, which will be in 2028. But there are several brands in the ACC that I think the Big Ten would be interested in.
which is not a plus for the ACC.
No.
So it's like, yeah, you no, like nobody wants the teams in the Big 12 so they can be who they are and do their thing and be on equal footing. Mm-hmm. Whereas it feels like everybody else is just sort of waiting for Florida State, Miami, and Clemson to get plucked, and then the rest of those guys are going to be like a new version of the American Athletic Conference, right? Like it's
absolutely
like what's left. And so, you know, like, do they combine with like, can you make one outlaw conference, right? That it's like, could you absorb Pitt and Boston College and some of the tobacco? Like, that's the thing. What do you do with Duke and Carolina basketball, right? There's still value. But the Big East died.
Yeah, it did.
UConn basketball, they suck at football, but it doesn't matter. Like, it's not holding back UConn basketball. It might even be a plus. So maybe that's the future for Duke and North Carolina and schools like that.
Yeah, I don't even know. I think that there's a great deal of confidence at, like, Florida State and Clemson that, like, the Big Ten are going to take them. I don't know that there should be. Necessarily. I know that the SEC wouldn't want either one of those. I mean, that goes back years of bitterness. SEC would not. Now, Miami, I think the SEC would want. I know both of them want North Carolina. My hunch is the Big Ten would want Miami, too. And some of it's just my own bias. But when you think about the changing landscape of the sport, like, are we sure that the SEC or the Big Ten wouldn't want SMU? I mean, it's a smaller school. It's private. It's elite academics. And they got a ton of oil money. Like, they're in Dallas. It's kind of a quirky, fun little brand. Like, are we sure that they're not more valuable 3 years from now than Clemson?
No, that's definitely possible. Again, and part of it to me is, aren't the SEC, I don't know. The SEC and the Big Ten are in pretty good spots right now. Like, are we sure, right? Because every time you expand, you have to make sure that the overall piece for everybody doesn't get smaller.
Yep.
So at what point is it like, do we really want to be a 22-team conference? Like, I don't know.
I think
know.
The SEC is already there, Doug. I don't think the SEC wants to do anything. I think they're good. I don't think that there's anybody out there that they would add or that they feel like they have to add. I think the Big Ten would want to get into that part of the country, though.
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, like, I don't know. They're in Southern California. It felt like there was an imperative with expansion previously, right? Especially from a Big Ten perspective. You don't just want to be in the Midwest. Demographic shifts and all that kind of stuff. But now you're on the East Coast. You're on the West Coast. I get wanting to be in the South and wanting to be in Florida and Texas. But also it doesn't feel like they need to do it or they're going to die. Right, no. Which there was a time where it felt like I don't know if in the modern world staying in the Midwestern footprint is enough. But I think this, you know, you got LA and you got mm-hmm. you got New York, baby, sex records. I'm curious how that will expand. Doesn't it feel more like those schools now pitching themselves to the conferences rather than the conferences being on the hunt for like we're going to track you down and pull you in whether you want to come or not because we're going to offer you something that you can't turn down. It's more like those schools being like, hey, you know, take a look at us.
Yep. Yeah. I think Florida State thinks they're coming in 2028. People down there believe that. I don't believe that, but I think that's what is believed down there. I did want to ask you about some of the stuff that's come out at Michigan with Ward Manuel. Look, I've said this throughout the week, Doug. I'm not sure your position on all of this, but I'm going to give you a chance to answer for it. But just, I think the one thing, I use this line from The Wire, if you've seen that series. Lester Freeman had a great line. You go after drugs, you get drugs dealers. You go after the money, you don't know what the heck you're going to get. That's kind of how I feel about college athletics. Like, if you start going after football, the cover-up is just insurmountable almost. I mean, this went all the way up to the president with the Spygate stuff, and then the Sharon Moore stuff is, it's just amazing that they thought that the cover up with that was worth all of this, or he was worth the cover up. What did you just make of everything that has happened up there over the last 5 to 7 years?
So it's hard, like on one level, haven't people, like, as we think about the North and the Big Ten trying to compete with the SEC and the South, isn't it like, you know what, maybe you should cheat a little bit and keep your mouth shut, right? Yeah. Haven't people wanted that? Like, they do it, they cheat, and they don't turn themselves in at the first sign of an infraction. Like, just do what you got to do to win and shut your mouth. And so there's some of that that Michigan's doing that, you know, I think you have to decide if you want to live in that world or not. Right now, again, a lot of the stuff that makes people mad is the hypocrisy of it, that if you're holding yourself up as a Michigan man, Michigan's above all this, and then you're doing that, well, then don't do that. Then the hypocrisy is annoying. But if it's like, we're going to do whatever it takes to win, and that includes lying to the NCAA, it's like, okay, I don't know, kind of worked for the South for 30 years. The thing that's the strangest to me is if they knew about the Sharon Moore affair and all that kind of stuff, and they were like, Jim Harbaugh's leaving for the NFL, that's our guy. Like, that part of it is like, what are you doing?
Yes.
Like you said, there's part of this that it's like, if you did what you had to do with whatever, with Harbaugh, but it's like, we're going down with Sharon Moore. It's like, that is not, that steak is not worth the sizzle, baby. Like, you went down for Sharon Moore? Are you kidding me? You could have hired anybody in America come take over for Jim Harbaugh. That's insane to me. And if that's the decision of the president and the AD to know about what he was doing in his personal life and then saying he's the new leader of the program, that's unforgivable. I have no idea. That's insane leadership to me. So that's the craziest part of it. Yes? Yeah.
Yes, of course. Like, good Lord, for him? We're going to do this? What are we doing? Yeah. Crazy. Unless he had the secrets, unless he just knew stuff and they're like, we can't, we got to, I don't know. That's the only sense I can make of it.
Then it's a mini series. Then if it's like Sharon Moore's like, you better make me the head coach or I'm taking it all down, I'd watch 10 episodes of that. Like, if that's what it was, oh my God, now it's The Wire in college football. What are we doing?
We may get it.
The secrets?
Oh, our mutual friend, John Eubanks, going to get a lot of FaceTime on that series. I promise you that.
Oh my God. Yeah.
All right, buddy.
What are you gonna do?
Good talking to you as always.
I'll see you.
There he goes. Doug LaMaurice joining us on the Bryan Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline, the Bill and Doug Show on YouTube, billanddougshow.com as well. We'll get your thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Video listener, are you having a stressful day? Do you want to unwind before you go home to your annoying family? Good news. You can spend time with our annoying family. Common Man and Timmy.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
The Fan. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
We'll read your emails on the air.
But we won't tell you where to send them.
Hey, we're not doing all the work for you.
This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Thursday edition. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
In case you missed it, Argentina beat England 2-1 yesterday to advance to the World Cup final. That match will be Sunday at 3 o'clock at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. So Spain and Argentina are going to go for the World Cup. The consolation, that game will be in Miami Saturday at 5 p.m. between England and France. English manager Thomas Tuchel, after yesterday's heartbreaking defeat, had this to say about that consolation game. Quote, nobody of these players, nobody of the French players wants to play for this match. They want to play in the final. We gave everything to play in the final. End quote. Thing or not a thing?
Well, what I'm curious for him and for the French side as well is, will they play? You know, like, really? Like, I've never watched a World Cup consolation game. Like, is there a great deal of do they play hard? Like, is Mbappe going to play? Dembele and Olise? Like, are all of those guys, Olise, are like all of those guys playing for France? Is like Harry Kane and Jude Bellingham? Like, if you're Real Madrid, and I mean, two of the six guys I just mentioned are critical to your operation. Like, do you want them playing in a game for nothing? In youth sports, this is a play for nothing game. Like, we just leave. Let's get out of town. Let's get on the road back. I know why they do it. Obviously, there must be money and they've promised it for the television partners. But like, if you manage either one of these teams or you're one of these players, and by the way, even the guys on the bench are have massive club obligations somewhere at massive clubs for those two teams, do you want to play in this thing? Like, do they try? Or do they just, like, kick it around for 90 minutes and that's it? That'd be my guess.
Yeah, it feels pointless. And I know that third place does get more money than fourth place. I went ahead and looked it up. It is a $2 million difference. So in third place, you get $29 million. In fourth place, you get $27 million. So that doesn't feel like that's moving the needle for these guys. Maybe it is, but I would, if I had to guess, I'd say they probably do not care that much about that $2 million at this point. They probably would rather get home and continue on with their lives, because once you get knocked out of the championship game, I can't even believe in 2026, when we can't get players to even half attempt to play in an all-star game, we're trying to make them play in a consolation game after you got knocked out of the final. I feel like this is way, way long ago. This should have been done with probably three World Cups ago.
$29 million, is that split amongst everybody on the team, or does that go to the organization?
Let me find that.
I wonder if, I mean, because Tuchel was asked about this right after the game, after the match, and so I'm sure emotions are high there. So I wonder, you know, give it a couple of days, maybe they would want to go out and kind of leave on a positive note.
That is for the team.
The organization gets it, so the players don't?
The players don't. Then the federations decide how that money is used, player bonuses, things like that.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I can't imagine anyone tries. Maybe I'll check it out on Saturday and just see, like, are all of those guys even in the lineups?
And that game will be 5 o'clock Saturday on Fox. The final will be Sunday at 3 o'clock also on Fox. On Good Morning America Thursday, so that'd be this morning, America, Steph Curry was on talking a bunch of different things, and they asked him to pitch Golden State Warriors to LeBron James. And I'll paraphrase Steph's here, is it's great to play. The Bay is awesome. You love golfing here, but do what you want to do. Do what you think is best for you. And so a lot of people took that to mean he kind of knows that they're out on it. Mark Spears on ESPN this morning says, quote, "I'm hearing today the Warriors internally feel like they're a dark horse at this point. LeBron James is probably going out east," end quote. Thing or not a thing?
It's only a thing if he doesn't go to Cleveland. Because I just feel like that's what this is always going to be. I don't see any of the other ones. I see no scenario how he would play in Philly for a year. It makes no sense to me at all. Miami, I guess, but like that didn't exactly leave on the best terms with him and Riley and all of that. So, and I don't think that's a basketball fit at all. Like, they're not going to have any shooters. So I don't understand that fit. So to me, like the Golden State one, it's odd, but I think like fans up there would kind of understand it from like the Wild Hogs angle. But it's got to be Cleveland. I think that's the only one that makes any sense narratively.
We talked about it a little bit earlier, and I saw DeMarcus Cousins on a podcast talking about this, how he wants LeBron to go somewhere essentially where he's going to get his flowers, which feels like it has to be Cleveland, because that's where he's going to be appreciated the most. He goes to Philly, like he's going to be the fourth option on the 76ers. Is that the way that arguably the greatest player of all time wants to end his career? We've seen some other stars kind of get weirdly exited from the NBA recently, with Chris Paul was one that was kind of an odd one. Even the way that Kevin Durant's last like 5 or 6 years have been really odd, from the Nets to the Suns and then now to the Rockets. I feel like if LeBron wants the flowers that we all know that he really wants, he needs to go to Cleveland to get those.
On Wednesday, free agent center Ethan Posick was medically cleared after suffering a torn Achilles back in December. The 30-year-old Posick's a free agent after spending the last 4 years in Cleveland. Posick was a second-round pick in 2017, played his first 5 seasons with the Seahawks, appearing in 57 games with 40 starts. He started 57 games for the Browns after signing in 2022. Thing or not a thing?
Good for him. I can't believe how quickly you can come back from an Achilles now. I mean, this happened in December. It's crazy that he's cleared 7 months later on what used to be a 12-month injury. So I think that's incredible. Medically cleared, I'm curious, does that mean he can get back to working or like cleared to play? My hunch is what Ethan will do is he will be very choosy with his next choice. He'll see if there are any camp injuries to contenders and then go to one of those type of places, would be my guess on how that works.
He felt like a bright spot in a Browns offensive line the past couple of years that hasn't been fantastic. I've already seen on X multiple fan bases that are saying we need Ethan Post to get center right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he'll be pretty smart with all of that and land in a good spot. 20 most interesting programs. We have never done the Auburn Tigers as one of the 20 most interesting programs. They are this year in large part to some local ties. We get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. The morning crew is in the clubhouse as the first round of the British Open turns to the late afternoon at Royal Birkdale. Daniel Brown and Sung J.M. lead at 4-under. Bryson DeChambeau dropped a bogey on 18 that's got him 3-under. Defending Open champion Scottie Scheffler's in the clubhouse at 2-under. Rory McIlroy and Matthew Fitzpatrick are even through 2. In soccer, Argentina came from behind again, this time against England. Lionel Messi recorded a pair of assists to power the world champions past the English 2-1 and punch their ticket to the World Cup final. Argentina's going to take on Spain Sunday at 3 o'clock at MetLife Stadium. England's going to battle France Saturday in Miami. In baseball, the regular season resumes today. Just one game on the slate Thursday. The Guardians back from the break tomorrow hosting the Pirates, while the Reds are at the Rockies on Friday. This update is sponsored by the Waterworks and Header Plumbing, Drain, Heating, and Cooling, together to serve you better. Scheduled today at thewaterworks.net.
On YouTube, search WBNS Radio and you can see what Bo looks like. But only if you subscribe. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour on a Thursday edition of the program. Time for our fourth in our list of 20 most interesting programs. These are not done in order, but we've been on an SEC kick the last couple of days. Did Texas, did Oklahoma. Today, we do the Auburn Tigers. Hit it, fellas.
We'll expand conferences. We'll expand the playoffs, but we'll never, ever expand our interests. Bishop and Friends present the 20 most interesting programs.
And this is really for one reason. Who their head coach is. That's why the Auburn Tigers are on this mix. Auburn, it's crazy. They have won a national championship in the last 20 years. The magical season with Cam Newton, where Gene Chizik, of all humans, was the head coach of that. He's a national championship coach. They played for another one. So they have been against Florida State. So they have been in the mix a couple of times. They have a ton of talent in the state. They have a big-time booster group that's ready to go. But beyond that, they've been kind of wayward since the Newton era happened. A lot of it, they had to just survive Saban, and eventually they did, and they got out of it, and now they're in this spot. And this enters our guy, Alex Golish, who is the head coach at Auburn. He is a local guy. He was a 3-year Lettle winner at Scioto High School, and he was here on the Ohio State staff all the way back in 2004-05. His path to becoming the head coach at Auburn, it tells you, like, For the kids out there who want to be coaches, just listen to this in terms of what he signed up for to get to this point. By the way, he did so at the age of 42. All the way back in 03, he's the Westerville Central defensive line coach. Then 04-05, grad assistant at, or student assistant at Ohio State from 04-05, then Northern Illinois GA 06-07, Oklahoma State GA 08, Toledo running backs coach from 09. He's at Toledo all the way until 2013, and he's a recruiting coordinator there. Then he goes to Illinois. He's at Illinois from 2012 to 2015. Then he's at Iowa State for 3 years, then UCF for a year. Tennessee, offensive coordinator, tight end coach in 21-22. South Florida head coach in 23-25, where he went 23-15 in those 3 years. He was 2-0 in bowl games. He comes to Auburn along with his quarterback, and that's a big part of this. Byron Brown comes over with him from South Florida. He was a 4-year player for Golish at South Florida, and he will be the starting quarterback. He was really good last year, 31-58, 28 touchdowns, 7 picks, ran for another 1,000 yards and 14 touchdowns. As they go, he will take them. They were coming off of a 5-7 season, just 1-7 in SEC play. Hugh Freeze was fired in November of last season. Then DJ Durkin finished out the season. Recruiting, it did not go well in 2026, but it is going well in 2027. 39th overall in 2026. That's kind of an aborted season when you think about that, because that's Freeze's last class, kind of. They're doing pretty well in 27. They're 11th. They were good in the portal as well. 9th best class in the portal. If you're curious where that ranks, it ranks very similar to where Ohio State was, or where Indiana was, Kentucky, but this is on Golish. I'll be very candid with you. I don't know what Auburn can be, but one of the things that we've talked about with our good friend Mr. Feinbaum, who will join us tomorrow at 10:30, when we talk about Auburn and Alabama, obviously Alabama is the school of record in the state, but Auburn's got some pretty good punching power too, and it's one thing that I learned in my time in the South is that Auburn actually has more money than Alabama. Auburn has the big money boosters that Alabama doesn't quite have. So it's an outpost. It's a beautiful campus. It's a really cool little town. It's a place where obviously you can win at the highest level, proven by the fact that they've won a national championship. And then it just is a matter of what can Golish do in this spot? And was this the right time for him to take this type of job? I would contend that it is. That it's kind of ripe for it. That's probably, this is the best spot Auburn's been in a while, especially juxtaposed to the situation Alabama finds themselves in.
I mean, he's 42. He's coming off a season in South Florida where the Bulls were in the mix for that group of five spot in the college football playoff. And it seems like, unlike Alabama, this Auburn job is anybody but Hugh Freeze, please. Because all Freeze wanted to do, and the recruiting numbers show and the on-field results show, that Hugh Freeze had no interest. He got his paycheck. All he wanted to do was coach. Or all he wanted to do was golf and not coach.
He golfed?
He golfed all the time.
Did
you hear about it? Yeah, all the time.
All the time.
And that, I mean, that made so many people down there angry. And, of course, up here, we're laughing at these kinds of things.
Yeah.
Because for Ohio State, and that's Golish's alma mater, you don't have those kinds of issues.
Mm-mm.
But in Auburn and in Alabama, that's what they're dealing with. They're dealing with a coach who's never going to be able to live up to Nick Saban, and another coach who doesn't even want to be there. He just wants to go golfing. And so Golish, mm-hmm. I can't imagine the breath of fresh air that he brings as a younger guy, as a guy with so much experience doing so many different things at different places. His portal haul is going to be great. This is a team with a very ambitious schedule, the Auburn Tigers have. But if they can be bowl eligible and pull an upset or two, they can make for a very interesting SEC season. And I think it's kind of the ceiling this year. They got a dual threat quarterback that you mentioned. They got their entire offense is out of the transfer portal, but they have some talent, because you're always really going to have talent at Auburn. Mm-hmm. The blue chippers, the five stars, you'll be fighting with Alabama for your entire tenure. That's how it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a place where he doesn't have to make the playoffs this season, but if you can be bowl eligible and you can pull an upset or two, maybe at Georgia, maybe there's an Alabama upset looming, you can turn things very quickly, and he might be the guy to do it.
And it's funny too, because if you guys remember to last season, in the very beginning of the year, South Florida was popping off. They were fantastic. Obviously, Byron Brown was a big part of that. Getting him to transfer is huge, because Auburn last season, the defense was great. The offense was what was holding them back. There was a certain point of last season where they were a part of a handful of teams, which was probably just them and Ohio State, that held every single opponent they played against under 24 points, and they were still losing games. Towards the end of the season, they let two go. Alabama and Vanderbilt both got the best of them, got over 24. But those were the only games last season where their defense had any issues at all. The offense was just bad. So bringing over the new quarterback, obviously, is going to be a big help to them. And like you said, the schedule's tough. But the pressure there, it feels like he has a little bit longer of a runway than most of the SEC schools. I think this season, like you said, get to a bowl game. By next year, they're going to have a little bit of higher expectations. But they do have the money that they can support him if he can get it rolling.
They gave him a 6-year deal to be the head coach there. So that's a long runway, relatively speaking, to be able to land it. If you think about, and Georgia really has a ton of rivalry games. I'm sorry, Auburn has a ton of rivalry games. They have the Alabama game, obviously, the Iron Bowl. They also have Georgia, who, which is I think it's the old. I think they call it, it's the oldest rivalry in the South.
Deep South's the oldest rivalry.
Yeah, so there's that one that matters a lot too. You talked about their schedule. They do the unfortunate thing as the SEC goes to 9, in that they get a little tester right away. They host Baylor Week 1. That's your 3:30 ESPN game on September 5th. So they host Baylor Week 1, then Southern Miss at home, then Florida at home, then Vanderbilt at home. So they go. They have four straight home games before going at Tennessee, at Georgia, LSU at home, at Ole Miss, Arkansas at home, at Mississippi State, Samford, and then at Alabama for the Iron Bowl game. I like their brand. I like the atmosphere. I like the stadium experience. It's a really cool place. I think if you get the right guy there, and if Golish is the right guy, I do think that you can win. I mean, it was Chizik. They won the national championship with Chizik. They then knocked on the door with Gus Malzahn. And so they never have really kind of had this thing where they could punch toe-to-toe with Alabama. It hasn't been that way in quite a while, and now maybe they can. I mean, there is no more stockpiling of talent in Tuscaloosa. That's over. So if you can now just buy players and pay a premium for them, and Golish is the guy to do it, you know, kind of look out a little bit on Auburn. And I'll be rooting for him man. I mean, this is a local guy. As the head coach at Auburn, like, I just went over his path. Can you imagine signing up for that? No matter what you were doing in life, like a move every 2 years. I mean, think about the path. And to get there at 42 is remarkable that he got there that quickly. And he did such a good job at USF. And I think he left the place in pretty good spot for Hartline. So, yeah, I mean, I'm rooting for him and I'm rooting for them. And they're not going to be a situation where they're going to be contending. But could they be a dangerous team for some of these teams that they play? With that quarterback, yeah, that type of dual threat, I think that they possibly could. And if they do, how close are they from passing Alabama, even in their own state, which for them would matter the most? We will hit the categories on the War Eagle fellas coming up next. Zach Blackerby going to join us at 11:30 on the Auburn Perspective. That's all coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Football camp is coming, and our team of fan personalities will be there live. All the sweaty sack fun starts Thursday, August 6th. For tickets, head to Ticketmaster.com. Your home of the Buckeyes. The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We have hazy and humid conditions for today. That wildfire smoke in Canada still overhead today, giving us a milky sky. Highs reach the mid-90s with the feels like in the upper 90s. Very slight chance of a shower popping up today. For your Friday, hazy once again. We'll see highs around 90. There may be a few showers and storms developing later in the day as well. For the Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact Meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Connect with the show on X at 971-BFS. Jump in our YouTube chat or just send a raven. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
This was, before we get into the categories on the Tigers, they're having ACC Media Days are happening right now. James Franklin talking this morning, representing Virginia Tech, and said, quote, at one point, there has to come a time when we talk about the job that I currently have at Virginia Tech. So everybody wants to relitigate Penn State with him down at ACC Media Days. So there you go. That's the situation you're having down there. The situation we're having here, 20 most interesting, for the first time, the Auburn Tigers. Hit it. This is War Eagle, is what they call this.
That it is.
Yeah. It's not bad. I'm down. Yeah. That's a pretty cool on the list of like all-time cool traditions in college football, and there are a billion of them. Like, you're letting a gold eagle fly around your stadium. That's a win. That's a win. Don't bring it into the press box. I don't need that. But flying around the stadium, I'm for it. That's a win. All right, college football 26 adaptability grade for the Tigers of Auburn, Reese.
Just because they went from a recruiting ranking of 39th and 26 to 11th and 27, and they've got a transfer portal ranking of 9th per 24/7 Sports. I'd say it's pretty good, so I'm going to give them a C+.
I had them right at a B-. They've kind of struggled a little bit over the past couple of years, but I think they're starting to get things trending in the right direction here with the Alex Gulish hire. And I think whenever you bring a coach in right now that is coming from a non-Power 5 school and you're bringing in South Florida, the transfers, Byron Brown, getting them over to Auburn, that's a huge booster. We saw it with Kurt Cignetti. I feel like there's a lot of teams that are trying to grab that and do the similar thing where you can get the transfers, the older guys, kind of combining two teams into one. I think that's a good move, and I think they have the money available. They just got to get things rolling.
I think they've been probably a D in this era up until now, but I don't know how much of that is just they had the wrong coaches in those positions. Like, could those coaches sell what Auburn is all about? And I feel like maybe Gulish can, by evidence of what they're doing in recruiting in 27. So I think it's probably C+. That's what you had at Reese. I think that's pretty fair. C+, B-, but I think there's upward mobility for them in that conference and nationally as well. If they get behind Gulish and he proves that he's up to a very, very big job. Uniform brand grade for Auburn, Reese.
I think it's a C+. I've never been the biggest fan of Auburn's unis. They've always been fine to me. Mm-hmm.
I have them as a B+. I do like the white helmets. I like the logo on the side. I think Jordan Hare is pretty cool. But I think the navy-ish blue and the orange looks cool together for me.
Yeah, I like it a little more than Reese. I'm probably more aligned with you, Isaiah. I think it's a B+. I think that it's... I like anything that you have to explain how... Like, they yell War Eagle, and you have to... Now, what is this all about? Why do you have an eagle when you're the Tigers? Like, there's 1,000 Tigers in the SEC. Like, everybody named their team Tigers, so they have kind of this War Eagle part of it. There's a train track that runs right by Auburn, Alabama, where they do some cool things with. Jordan Hare is awesome. The campus is awesome. The brand is pretty good. I think it's like a B+ for me, somewhere in there. But I do like some of the unique things that they have, some of the rivalries they have. They got a lot of history and tradition and stuff down there that's pretty cool. All right, if you could, and this is a good one, this is a tough one. You could add one historical player who played at Auburn to this roster. Who do you add, Reese?
I'm adding Cam Newton. And I don't know where I'm even going to play him.
Byron Brown's going to the bench.
So maybe I'm using the two quarterback thing. Cam Newton's going to be a tight end. I don't know. Cam Newton felt like one of the ultimate cheat codes in college football.
I think he probably was.
Just from a physical standpoint. And I mean, it's like a Gronk thing. I feel like for college football, there's Cam Newton. He's open.
I think for me, I think there's two possible answers here. My answer is also Cam Newton. I mean, he's Tim Tebow-esque. He carried that Auburn team and I was talking to Dylan about this earlier, and he said there was only one other NFL player that was on the offense other than Cam Newton, which for national championship contending teams, that just doesn't happen. He was incredible that season for a one-off season player. He's one of the greatest ever to do it.
Also, because I knew what Bo would pick.
Yeah, we knew what Bo was going to pick.
Well, it's in my Twitter logo. It's Cam Newton had the best single season in the history of college football because of what you said, Dylan just said, and something we've talked about a lot. It's between him and Burrow, best single season. But Cam Newton did not have Ja'Marr Chase. He did not have Justin Jefferson. He did not have Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He did not have all of the NFL talent that they had at LSU. It was him stand, and he was good enough to do it. And he did all the things that Mendoza did, all the things Burrow did, and he did it without the help. Just didn't have it. But the answer here is Bo Jackson, because you have a quarterback. And Bo Jackson in 2026 college football, I don't even know what you would do with him. Like, would you... just go into I formation? Can you imagine having Bo Jackson line up next to this Byron Brown dude in the read option game? He was the biggest, strongest, fastest player on every game he played, and he was a running back. There's no point of reference for what this would look like. I mean, he was big, he was faster than Adrian Peterson and bigger. And now you play him in 2026 college football? Good luck. I mean, I would love to see what that looked like. Would they get an official visit from Vince Howard, Reese?
Not today, no.
I think they could. I'm going to say no, but I think they're close. And it's because we've been saying yes to this a lot because of the proximity thing, which it's in his neighborhood. I'm going to lean no right now, but if they could turn things around, they would.
I think it's a no. I think they're probably a couple years. Like, if you did this, if Alex Golish gets hired at the time Jason Street gets hurt at West Dillon or Dillon Panthers, and he's got a couple of years of momentum, could he be on the radar for Vince Howard? Maybe. But probably not. No, I don't think you're getting an official visit unless you pay for one. Coaching grade, Alex Golish. Reese?
I'm going to say C+. I think it was the right hire. I think he's going to do a good job. He's already done a really good job, in my opinion. I think he's going to do a really good job on the field for a team with expectations of just make a bowl game. In year one, I think that's all you can ask for.
I gave this a B- because I mainly have to, it's more of like a higher grade. I think this was a good hire for them. And mm-hmm. I think the big bonus is you get the quarterback too. Like, that's going to be an immediate boost for him. He's bringing his quarterback that's a redshirt senior that he got to play with last season who played great. I think that's a big bonus. I think he can turn things around. I think they were just a little bit late to making a move at Auburn. That's what hurt them the most.
Yeah, I'm going to go a little above. I'm going to go B-. He's a local guy, and I'm rooting for him in a big, big way. I like the hire. I like this trend. I mean, they did it. Oklahoma State did it. Florida did it, where you hire the coach who's going to bring his quarterbacks and his players with him. And I think that's a kind of a starting on second base situation. I think he's bringing a really good quarterback with him. So this is a big-time job, though. It is a big-time job, and I hope Alex is up to it, certainly rooting for him. I'm going to go B- on this one. I like the hire. But boy, that's a big spot going in there. The good news is he's got a 6-year deal, and that money's going to cash even if this thing doesn't work. So good for him. But I think it will work there, and that's part of why they're one of the 20 most interesting. Sliding doors moment for Auburn football. Reese?
So the game after kick six, the 2014 BCS title game, they lose to Jamison, Florida State, 34-31. Gus Malzahn's the head coach there. I think if they're able to get over the Seminoles there, after the momentum with kick six, I think would have propelled Auburn into a different category over the next 10 years.
It would have been two national titles in 5 years, Reese.
Yep.
So that's the one that I had listed, but I'll go a different way here. I have the Brian Harsin hire after Gus Malzahn. Gus was kind of reeling towards the end of his career, had some decent seasons, but the Brian Harsin hire was just a disaster for 2 years. Kind of began this rebuild that they're kind of been stuck in for the past six. So maybe a better hire after Gus left.
That's the one I think Dion wanted when they hired Harsin. I think
that was 2021, so that would make sense.
Yeah, I think he really wanted that gig coming out of Jackson State. He wanted that gig in a big way. I'm going to go in the Wayback Machine. Terry Bowden replaced Pat Dye there in the early 90s. He went 11-0 in year one. He went 9-1-1 in year two. Then he went 8-4, 8-4, 10-3. Then he's fired. In the 98 season, he's 1-5, but his Auburn tenure is 47-17-1. Terry got into some trouble off the field, and they basically made him go away. It's kind of as simple as it was. It was a very difficult thing for the Bowden family and all of it. And in today's world with social media, it would have spread like wildfire, but it was kind of this thing that they covered up kind of a lot of it at that time. But Terry Bowden was onto something there. And he never rebounded again, and it took them a long time to kind of rebound again, but he kind of had some program momentum there. At a time when Alabama was down, he kind of had some real program momentum there, and it all fell apart because of what happened off the field. And then Terry ended up at North Alabama. He's on television for a long time, ended up at North Alabama, had some winning seasons there. Then, oddly enough, ended up at Akron. And he was at Akron for like 7 seasons at Akron, for crying out loud. Most recently, he's been at Louisiana Monroe. That did not go well for him. But there was a moment there where they had some real momentum in the 90s, and it didn't work out. All right, win it all, make the playoff, too soon or flame out for War Eagle, Reese?
Too soon. I think they'll be there.
Same for me. I had too soon. I think if this same roster and team got planted into the ACC or Big 12, they'd be a lot more fun. In the SEC, it's a little too tough.
I think it's too soon as well. I think that there is real program momentum there, though, and I do think that there is an opportunity. I think this is a massive season in the state of Alabama for those two schools, for Auburn and for Alabama. Are we doing Alabama tomorrow, by the way?
We are.
Okay, so you'll get Roll Tide tomorrow. Pretty good. Can Kalen DeBoer get some momentum? If not, can Alex Golish get it at Auburn? Because can that state have two teams that are great at the same time? It happened once, but in a different era, it's hard to believe that they could. We'll get some perspective on the Auburn Tigers with Zach Blackerby. He joins us coming up in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE. Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Our top men are working on everything except this show.
We have top men working on it right now.
Who? Top men.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
We've been doing 20 most interesting programs around here for the last 8 or 9 years. This is the first time the Auburn Tigers have been on the list. Part of that, a little local bias with Alec Golish, but also because I think their program's in a very interesting spot. So for some perspective on the Tigers, we head out on the Bryan Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Zach Blackerby joins us. Locked On Auburn Tigers joins us there. Zach, thanks so much for taking the time. Just before we get into some of the specifics and Alex and the roster and all of that, just big picture, in the SEC, where does the Auburn job rank in terms of the quality?
I think that's a huge debate, right? I mean, it's one of the toughest jobs in the country, but it's always going to be well paid. You're going to have the resources to compete, but you do have to face, you know, two of the recent dynasties in college football every year with Alabama and Georgia. So I do think that's a debate, and I do think it's probably a step down now than it was maybe 5 years or so ago, but I do think it's a top half job in the conference.
So, Zach, that leads to the next one, which is one of the things we do when we go through all of these teams is we do college football 2026 viability. Like, are they locked in the way that they need to be in the portal with boosters, with NIL? Where does Auburn, for take Alex out of it and who the coach is for a second, where is Auburn in terms of on the same page with NIL, with collectives, and all the things that are needed now to manage in college football?
Yeah, I think Auburn has done a good job kind of being on the cutting edge side of NIL contracts. They seem to be on top of rev share. I mean, look at what they've done for the season opener where they're playing. They gave up a home game on their home-and-home half of their series with Baylor. They're playing that game in Atlanta. They're getting $6 million reportedly for NIL to kind of help bolster all of this. So I definitely think the alignment is there. That hasn't always been the case. I do think that's kind of a recent development. But, I mean, look, even when Auburn struggled last year, last 2 years under Hugh Freeze, Auburn wasn't winning, and they still got top portal classes and top classes coming out of the high school ranks. So I definitely think the alignment is there. The coaching hasn't, and that's what we hope Alex Golish could fix.
Yeah, certainly do. One more on the finances part of it, because we have, you know, we've got the Cody Campbell model out there where I'm just going to pay for everything. We got that at Miami too. And then there's another form of NIL fundraising that I call up here the Netflix model, which is you get a bunch of a big fan base to give you $50 a month and you pile it all together and you have a big pile of cash. Does Auburn have singular B billionaire boosters or multi-multi-millionaire boosters who can write checks if Alex needs one, or do they have to do it more Netflix model?
Yeah, no, they're doing both, but I would say the vast majority of it is probably the case in most places is you definitely have your big boosters that are doing this. You know, Golish posted a picture with Tim Cook, you know, a few weeks ago, and it's kind of funny. You know, it's kind of an ongoing joke ever since then. That's when we've gotten, you know, red hot on the recruiting trail. So, you know, is it him? Is it, you know, the yellow fella that we call him, Yellowwood? You know, Jimmy Rain's the richest man in the state of Alabama. You know, he's going to be a big part of what Auburn does from an NIL point of view. So they do that, and then they also have a service like most schools do called War Eagle Plus, where you pay, and you know it's a streaming service. They kind of have some exclusive content there, but the point of that is to raise money for NIL and all of that. So they have both, but the vast, vast, vast majority is from those big players in the NIL space.
So, Zach, are they more wealthy in that aspect than Alabama is?
That's the ongoing debate right now, because you look at where Alabama's class is, like, the board's done a really good job recruiting at Bama the last 2 years, and now the big thing is, okay, Alabama has to spend to, you know, on retention, and so that's why their class is ranked so low. You know, Auburn has a roster that's paid more this year than the previous ones, and that's going to be the case across college football, but that definitely seems to be a thing right now where if you're picking Auburn over Alabama and Georgia, like, you are receiving more money. That does seem to be kind of a common theme right now in recruiting throughout the Southeast.
And by the way, if I were an Auburn fan or a booster or Alex Golish, I would say, yeah, so what? Like, this is all legal. We got more money and we're going to spend it. To me, I would use that as a sense of pride, but that's just from our perspective
Why is it a bad thing?
Yeah, I don't understand it, dude.
This kid. It's like, well, in your job, like, if somebody called you, just to general you, and like, same industry, same job, but you can make, you know, 20, 30, 40% more, like, you're not even thinking about it. You're going home and talking to your family, like, yeah, dad's getting a new job. I don't think it'll impact anything, but we're just going to make more money. Like, everyone would do that.
Zach, I said the same thing around here when 2 years ago in Ohio State, everyone is up in arms about a $20 million roster, which, by the way, now is peanuts. But everyone is up in arms. And I'm like, if I was Ryan Day, I'd get on the podium and I would just say, yes, so we have it. This is the way that the sport is being played. Who cares how you come about it? So I guess the next thing, though, with Alex is, who's a local guy here, grew up around here, was on the Buckeye staff 20 years ago for a brief cup of coffee, and we've kind of watched his ascent. How did his hire land at Auburn, and what have you seen since he's taken the job that leads you to believe that he's the right guy for the job?
You know, it's funny. We didn't really talk about Alex Golish in the coaching carousel because – there was that report that leaked out of Fayetteville, Arkansas, that he was going to be the guy at Arkansas whenever South Florida's season ended. So, you know, it's funny. I probably did 20 shows on 20 different coaches that could make sense. Mm-hmm. And I didn't bring up Alex Golish because it kind of seemed like he was off the board. And so Auburn was also super tied into John Sumrall. And ultimately he picked Florida after Florida lost out on those Lane Kiffin sweepstakes, of course, to LSU. So, I think the initial response was, okay, who is this guy? And then you start digging into everything he's done. It's like, all right, he's been an excellent recruiter at every stop that he's been at. Every step that he's done has been a very clear step up as far as, you know, your career trajectory there. And then you look at what he did the last time he was at the SEC, level as an offensive coordinator. I mean, they had the best offense in college football when he was the offensive coordinator under Josh Heupel, when in 2021 and 2022, I mean, he changed Hendon Hooker's life, right?
Yeah.
And so then he goes to South Florida, and, you know, that's a program that had won 4 games in the 3 previous years, and he makes them a competitive program, obviously beating Boise State last year, obviously taking down Florida. I mean, he won as many SEC games as Auburn did last year at South Florida. So, you know, as we learn more and more about the guy, it's like, yeah, okay, this guy's been successful in a way that, you know, Auburn fans are craving, like just needing that solid, explosive offense again. It's been so long. And then you hear the guy talk, and you hear the attention to detail that he has. And that's really what Auburn's been lacking over the last, you know, really, I would say 2.5 coaching stints. It's been that attention to detail, that ability to build a culture, and just really being intentional about every aspect of running a football program. So I think the initial response was, okay, hold on, let's look into this. And then obviously, you know, what's transpired since then has been, I think, a lot of off the field winning. We'll see if he can turn it on to, you know, turn it into wins on the field.
And it helps he brings his quarterback, who's pretty dang good.
He is. He is. You know, I think some people freaked out about the viral video of his throwing motion. That was kind of dramatic and a little a bit of an overreaction. I think a lot of people told on themselves, like, oh, so you haven't watched him at all? Like, you didn't change the throwing motion when you got here. It's like, it looks like a multiple season 3,000-yard passing throwing motion to me. Yep. But yeah, one of the most productive players in college football last year. Only, what, 12 players have thrown for 3,000 yards and rushed for 1,000 yards in a single season. Byron Brown has done that. We'll see what kind of production he has there. But look, I think a lot of the South Florida guys he brought over have a chance to make a tremendous impact.
All right. So success in year one, we do a thing around here where we set the expectation and then we judge the team to that expectation. What is realistic? And I understand we're talking about a college football hotbed, so sometimes realistic is worth about a grain of salt. But what is a realistic expectation? And for you, what would lead you to believe that he's got this going in the right direction year one?
Yeah, I would say realistic expectation is 7-5. I think anything under that would be disappointing. I think anything over that, the vast majority of Auburn fans would take in a heartbeat. Auburn's got a really tough schedule. Some places call it, you know, a top five toughest schedule in college football. And like, look, that's just part of it. That's going to be, that's the Auburn job that we mentioned at the top of our conversation. You know, looking at Vegas odds, like the win total pretty much across the board is 6.5. So to me, is if you can beat that, whether it's 7-5, 8-4, I think that should be the expectation. But I do think some of this is like, in the case of Byron Brown, it's either going to work or it's not. Like, I think there's a chance, like, you know, that 7-5 or 8-4 could be the expectation where a lot of Auburn fans are satisfied with it. It's like, okay, what's the next step? But I think if it clicks, I think 8-4, 9-3 is on the table. And if it doesn't click, you know, you're looking about where you have been, you know, around that 6-6 mark. So I think a lot of it comes down to Byron and if it clicks or not, and if this offense translates immediately to the SEC, which we've seen, you know, what Josh Heupel does at Tennessee, it seems to be effective. But as far as expectation goes, I'm saying 7-5 on my show pretty much every day.
All right, buddy. Really appreciate you. Great stuff. Thank you so much for your time. Greatly appreciate you giving us a little bit of it today.
Hey, shout out to the in-laws over in Dublin, Ohio, going up there.
Come
in a week
on.
And a half. So maybe I'll run into you in about 2 weeks or so.
Well, how about that? The in-laws in Dublin with local connects for you too, my friend. That's very, very good. Yeah, you can do by name if you'd like.
Yeah, shout out Mark and Sarah. Hopefully they're listening.
Let's go. Great stuff, Zach.
Small world, yeah.
It really is, man. Thanks for your time, buddy.
Thanks.
All right, we'll get you three things on a Thursday up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Your favorite fan shows are available as a podcast. What a concept! And don't miss exclusive podcast content like Austin and Burn. Listen on your schedule from anywhere in the world. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Right Way Heating and Cooling and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
10 feet tall and bulletproof isn't just a saying, it's a way of life. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
It's a pretty interesting excerpt from a Chris Vanini piece who on SMU, and the ponies will be down the road on 20 Most Interesting, but he details a pact that was made on a guy named Bill Armstrong, who's one of the billionaire boosters at SMU back in 2021. He said to Rhett Lashley, he said, Rhett, I've just been lied to by Sonny Dykes. Don't tell me how much you love SMU or you're never going to leave. Just win and I'm going to make sure I take care of you. You can take care of us. We'll take care of you. Then he has this to say about the bidding wars for players. Bidding wars are not a game you want to stay in, but you want to be competitive and know the going rate. We are in the game, so Rhett doesn't have to call us every time and say, do we have the money for this guy? It's just there for him. And there you go. There you go. What do you have in the poll today, Reese?
Daily Fan Poll sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. It asks, if LeBron doesn't choose Cleveland, Cavs fans should be. Your options are, we don't want him back. Roster still solid. Throw the season away. 62% say the roster is still solid. 22% say we don't want him back. 15% say throw the season away.
That 22% becomes 95%. If he goes somewhere else, yep, they'll all just say, well, we didn't want him
anyway. We don't want him anyway. Bum. He's old.
That's exactly. I mean, I want him. I mean, don't you guys want him? Like,
you're out of your mind
fun
if you don't want him back right now.
Yeah, it's fun. I don't know. I don't think it means anything in terms of winning a championship or anything, but it'd be more fun if he's around.
For the story, it'd be wonderful.
They're a better team with him.
Yes, they are. 100% they are. And there's no other way for them to get better other than adding him at this point. That's kind of the spot that they find themselves in. Time for three things on a Thursday.
One, two, one, two, three things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
Number one for me, I've illustrated this before, but another example of this. When you are the father of three boys, ages 14, 12, and 10, you are essentially the lion king, and they are constantly coming at you. And you have to fend them off at all turns, whether it's sports, any sort of competition. You're constantly battling them for various things. And it's been a good summer. I've asserted my dominance in the various sports over the course of the summer. Bootsy and I are on like a 10-game winning streak against the other two bozos when it comes to hoops. Dominated them in pickleball last weekend, so there's been no L's that I've taken. But they've taken to this new thing where, like, Beamsy, who used to be my guy, he's now like, Dad, let's grapple. And so I'll just be like walking in the house and he'll just grab me by the leg or like tase me and like try to wrestle me out of nowhere. Like my own business. Like a damn spider monkey, he just comes in. And then when he comes in and then another one jumps on with him, I got to keep my head on a swivel around here, fellas. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, always be on the lookout for the double leg takedown.
Gosh.
That's every point in life. Just be ready. Someone could try it. Throw Michigan's Board of Regents into Lake Michigan. Apparently, during their hour meeting in Traverse City this morning, they did not discuss the findings of that $12 million athletic department investigation. This from M Live's Sam Jane, who asked Michigan's president, Domenico Grasso, about Ward Manuel. Quote, the best AD in the country. Ward is one of the best athletic directors. He asked, is there an update on providing a status of the investigation? Will the results be released to the public? From Grasso, that's under consideration. We're still thinking about it.
Jeez.
An hour
John
long
Ubakin,
meeting?
Yeah, and John Ubakin, by the way, that's crazy. They're all the way in Traverse City. When John said that they were working on the buyout, I'm going to just say that's the real truth and the rest of this is nonsense. Yeah.
Yeah, the hour long, the first 15 minutes of any meeting, you're not even doing anything yet. It's a 45-minute long meeting.
Nothing bugs me more than that. Like a 15-minute preamble. Can we just get to why we're here?
All right, first thing for me, there's no quarterbacks recently that have changed my viewpoint on them more than Jameis Winston and Joe Flacco after both of them joined the Browns, because I've been watching little clips of season 3 of quarterback all along Twitter, and it's just Joe Flacco just cracking me up. The first one I saw was him just crapping on Shador for the visor thing. I don't know if you guys saw that on Twitter. You need to go see it. It's hilarious. Shador, he's essentially saying, you don't look cool if you wear a visor, and they're just going back and forth. It's awesome. So the way that Joe Flacco's trajectory has changed ever since I used to hate him when he was on the Ravens, and then him and Jameis Winston joining the Browns has made them both so much more likable. I'd take them both on the team right now as quarterback 2 and 3 just for clips online.
I said this, it was interesting. We said this to Joe one time when we were talking to him. I said, I think this was after that year where they took him to the playoffs. I think you're more beloved in Cleveland than you are in Baltimore. And he goes, I think you're right. I think you might be right. And he deserves all of it. He's so funny, such a cool dude, and really, really cool. Number two for me, the smoke's real. The smoke was real. I've been warned that it was coming. I woke up to it this morning. The sun was kind of a reddish, hazy. It reminds me, quite honestly, of, unfortunately, Montana in the summer, where it's just littered with wildfire smoke. And this is coming from Canada, is that right? Like Northern Rockies wildfire? Yeah. It's brutal. But a lot of the western states, like, this is just normal for summer now.
As is tradition, some news is going to be dropped after this program. You're going to get the entire NHL schedule at 1 o'clock today. The Blue Jackets are going to open the season, or at least their home opener is going to be Thursday, October 1st against the Buffalo Sabres. But all 84 games will be unveiled around 1 o'clock, so you get the other 83. And yes, I said 84 games. They added two to the NHL schedule this season.
Second thing for me, 24 hours from now, I'll be making my way to San Antonio, and I've done a lot of trips in the past couple of weeks. I'm hoping that this one is just relaxation. I've done a lot of exciting things in the past month or so. This trip alone, I just want to hang by the pool and feel rejuvenated when I get back on Monday. I don't know if I will, but I want to feel that way.
You're too damn young to need to feel rejuvenated, for God's sakes. What are you going down there for? Is this just a vacation?
Family vacation.
A family trip? Yep. Okay. I've never been to San Antonio. Hole in the resume. I look forward to hearing how it is, buddy. Happy, safe travels on all of that. Number three for me. So NBC is entering his freshman year and is constantly inquisitive about other parts of the world, and we've been fortunate enough to travel a lot, and I thought to myself, we were sitting there looking for something to watch last night, and I said, you know what, I think I'm going to introduce him to Anthony Bourdain. And so we went on the HBO Max and we did No Reservations and whatever the other one was, I can't remember the other one, but we looked for the ones, and he went to Montana twice. He came to Columbus once as part of like a Midwest thing, and he ate sushi at the sushi place in Dublin. And then he did Cleveland once, and then NBC wanted to see Australia. So we kind of bopped around. Good Lord, that dude was gifted. He was so gifted. Those shows are unbelievably, and they hold up spectacularly well.
Yeah, Bourdain's one of, if not the best storyteller, at least for me, that there's ever been in television. His books are incredible as well. Final thing here from James Franklin, who says they've won the offseason. I think we talked a little bit about his opening remarks with the Virginia Tech media and the ACC media earlier. But he also says before taking the job at Virginia Tech, he called Frank Beamer for his approval. I'll tell you what, if someone's going to win the press conference, James Franklin's making a run at it.
Yeah, seems like it.
Final thing for me coming up next, AR is going to be dissecting the jacket schedule release coming up at 1 o'clock. And then Hall of Fame Gold Jacket Thursday, a good one today. Maybe introduce the air raid, Dan Fouts.
Oh, wow. My first NFL jersey was a Dan Fouts jersey. Yeah, that's awesome. That's a good one. All right, you have that to look forward to, which is nice. We're back tomorrow. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while. Call 1-800.